far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode,
this is our Wing of the Union address, where we review Gundam Wing once again.
I fear we'll probably also end up talking about the State of the Union, since we both listened to the ghost broadcast of the State of the Union.
Hang on. Commentary. Says recording shows we're good, so I'm gonna go back in the closet. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so do we want to call this episode the Wing of the Union episode?
Yeah, sure. State of the Gundam.
State of the... We can call it the Oz of the Union. The Trace Fraction of the Union. White Fang of the Union. So many freaking, like, factions in that one series. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Alright, so I'll kick this off. Welcome to episode of Anime of Yesteryear podcast. We can consider this one of the, right stuff product reviews, cause this is a Blu-ray that it's taken me like 3 months to get through. Maybe 3-4 months, I think. Yeah. Okay, so I am your host, Dustin, and with me is my co-host, John.
Yes.
And we are talking about Gundam Wing. A series that I have not seen in 18 years since it first aired on Toonami.
Yeah, it's been a long time since it was on TV, and it was a big thing when it was first on, but it was in licensing limbo for many years with the rest of the Gundam series, and then finally they got it out from Right Stuff. For whatever reason, Bandai insisted on doing the UC shows first, and then they put out Wing, and then we're gonna have G Gundam coming before too long.
Yeah. Are you feeling under the weather?
No, not too bad.
Okay, you're not getting the flu, are you?
No.
Can a flu virus travel through audio podcast? Is that how it works?
I know you mentioned your brother had it, but I didn't know if you had gotten that or not.
I feel fine, actually. Like,
okay.
I now do. So, I'm kind of like, yeah. I mean, like, I'm like, okay, maybe it's going to hit me any day now. I don't know.
You must have a good immune system to have not gotten hit, because it seems like this was one of the worst years for it.
Yeah.
But because it didn't have a special designation like swine flu or bird flu or whatever, it didn't get as much coverage as those special scary animal flus.
Yeah. Geese flu. Cuckoo flu. Yeah, so Gundam Wing. totally not getting off track on the flu string or anything. You know, pacifism works like a flu string at the end of this series, because then everyone wanted to be pacifist for no apparent reason. Yeah, so Gundam Wing, like, I haven't seen this show in about, like, completely from start to finish in just about 18 years, because, I mean, I wonder if I can save, if we want to, well, I guess it's kind of better to put this out early because we're talking about the State of the Union, or will be. We're basically, like, this aired on Toonami on March 6, 2000, so it's coming up right at 18 years, and, I mean, yeah, and I guess there's just a lot for me to try to, like, figure out in my brain, because, I mean, I have no show notes with me at all, but, like, everything's kind of going off the top of my head, but, like, when I was 14 watching this, and I think with every other kid, like, Gundam Wing has its own set of rules and politics and how it does things and its own logic, and, you know, when you're young and you see Gundam Wing on, you're like, oh, cool mobile suit battles, and then the rest of this other dialect rhetoric that I have no effing clue what they're talking about. Because, like, I mean, political factions exist in Gundam Wing like rebel groups in Africa. There's always one rising and falling about every other week, it feels like.
Yeah. It is sort of like, you know, just watching the news and seeing, like, the clusterfuck of the Syrian civil war or something, where there's, like, 15 different groups being funded by the same people. They're all fighting each other. And
yeah.
Everybody's switching sides every day, and it can be a bit hard to follow because of that.
So yeah, you take that kind of, like, that reasoning, that way of how that works, and you apply giant mobile suits with it, and that is Gundam Wing. Oh, yeah. And then there's also a thing called space and colonies.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I think when you're watching the show will narrator, I believe who's Peter Cullen, will narrate over, like, battles in the show to move the plot along as to where the story is leading in terms of, like, the overarching theme. So, basically, the show starts out with, you've got this, like, huge organized military called the Earth Sphere Alliance. And they're bad.
For the narrator, before you get into the plot too much, I just Googled it. It's Campbell Lane is the guy who narrated it.
Really?
And, well, I think the reason you think of Peter Cullen is because when it first came on, Toonami had this epic, two-minute
trailer. Yeah, that was Peter Cullen's voice.
And it, like everything from Toonami in that era, you have Peter Cullen doing it. And, you know, that was one of their greatest of all time trailers of Toonami. You know, and that probably is a big part of why this show so big is compared to the other Gundam shows, is because it had such a great advertising campaign by Toonami when it started.
Yeah.
And they had these advertisements, which they would have one for each character of the main mobile suit pilots, explaining, like, what the deal is with Duo and Troa and all these characters.
Yeah, and how they're important, and yeah.
Yeah, and so that was very cool. And I think they did that a little bit for Mobile Suit too, because they were trying to make that the next big thing, but it didn't really take off, and it ended airing because of 9/11 and everything.
That was an excuse to take it off TV, yeah.
But the narrator, Campbell Lane, he is pretty good too. I think his voice is pretty definitive for this show.
Yeah, because his voice was for those no-grade Gundam Wing kits, I'm actually joining the website Gunpla 101 as a contributing writer to that. Uh-huh. And I wrote, like, my big first article is about Gunpla in America. So Gundam Wing was, I mean, basically we're kind of doing a re-review of this series, because we did review this in the early days of this podcast 5-6 years ago, I think. And, but now we're like, now that I saw the whole show, I can say a whole lot more on it. But, yeah, that voice actor, you know, was also the narrator for this show, but then also for the toy, at least one of the toy commercials with, like, the CGI Epion and Wing Gundam fighting, and then they have, like, these no-grade Gundam Wing model kits over, like, a Warhammer 40K playset with a fog machine. And, that's the best way I can describe the commercial. I'll definitely post it up in the show notes. But, yeah, his, like, I didn't know, like, I was like, did Peter Cullen change his voice a certain way? between like him being the narrator and then the narrator of that Toonami promo, because I was thinking about it the other day. I'm like, well, they sound sort of similar, but they are different. I mean, because they're different people. Yeah.
So apparently the other guy, stuff this guy did, he was Baron Wolfgang von Strucker in the Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. movie with Hasselhoff.
Okay.
And he's Skeletor in the New Adventures of He-Man, which I think is the 1990s season of He-Man.
Okay.
And he's Alpha Prime in RoboCop Alpha Commando. And Rampage in Transformers Beast Wars. So I think he's a Vancouver actor, because this is one of those Canadian dubs.
Okay. You're talking about for Wing, right?
Yeah, Wing, I think it's an Ocean dub.
Yeah, because Mark Hildreth is the voice of Hiro Yui, and he's been in a bunch of Ocean Dub stuff. But I know he's familiar. I know him as the voice of Terry Bogard in the Fatal Fury animes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else that I know I saw recently that he was in. Oh, I can't think. But I was like, oh, that's the voice of Hiro, and I don't think a lot of those guys still voice act anymore. Like Scott McNeil, the voice of Duo, like, I don't know what the last thing he's done, but I haven't heard him in anything recently as far as I know. But Scott McNeil is, like, someone I would love, or maybe it's Scott O'Neill or Scott. I like to say Scott McNeil.
It is McNeil.
Okay, I got that right. Like, based on his profile from, like, con pictures, it's him in a cowboy hat, and I'm like, dadgum, I want to meet this guy. Like, that is a guy I want to party with.
There's some humorous pictures of him on the Transformers wiki. They have, like, him with, like, a big, like, Megatron on his hand and stuff. Like, the dinosaur version of Megatron on his hand,
I guess.
Because he was in Beast Wars. And so he's always, like, dressing up and going to cons. And I think he said something like, you people are all completely insane. You're my people, or something. So he just seems like he's a real character.
Yeah.
I just looked
at him up on
TV, and he's very active still. He's apparently in Riverdale, the Archie show on the CW.
Oh.
And he's in Beyblade Burst, which is the Beyblade show that runs on Disney XD.
Okay.
He's in a new Woody Woodpecker show. He's in some Lego cartoons. So he's still out there. Okay. But
yeah, I'm glad
the thing is, there's not much anime that's being dubbed in Vancouver anymore.
Yeah.
I guess, like, Beyblade is probably, like, the only one at this point, because most of the companies that were doing dubs up there, like Bandai, they've kind of stopped, you know.
Yeah. I know McNeil does a lot of other side characters in Gundam Wing, and he'll sort of alter his voice a certain way, but you can definitely tell it's Scott McNeil doing, like, half the background characters. Like, they get some, like, kind of, like, if it's, like, a general with a beard, it's, like, him, like, talking like this, and... Yeah, but it's, like, it's in his voice.
He was in Superbook, the 2012 version of Superbook.
That must be the CGI one or something.
I guess that there was a newer one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's from 2012, must be CGI, yeah.
Yeah. Alright, I was talking about factions in Gundam Wing a second ago. So here's So here's the overarching theme of Gundam Wing. So, I mean, based on my memory of spending the past 3 months watching this show off and on, is you got the colonies in space and then Earth. And they're all controlled under what's called the Earth Sphere Alliance. And so the Earth Sphere Alliance is basically a giant federalized government, kind of like the Earth Federation. And the colonies are very oppressed by the United Earth Sphere Alliance. And so they send these scientists work on Gundams, which is Professor J and a bunch of these other mechanics that were former Earth Sphere Alliance, like, scientists that designed the mobile suits that they use. And another character in this called Howard also worked on them as well. But basically they send these Gundam pilots to be the voice and the freedom of the space colony, so they can be independent and start fighting these Earth Sphere Alliance units. So eventually, while this is taking place, let me get into the characters like Zex Marquis, who's kind of, he's like the Red Baron of the Earth Alliance or whatever. Behind the scenes, there's
isn't he more like the Red Comet?
he's this show's Red Comet or Char, basically. He wears like a red uniform that's different from anybody else, and he has a mask on, and he has blonde hair and blue eyes, kind of like Char.
He's very like Char.
Yeah. So while this is going on, there's a coup that's happening or uprising within the Earth Sphere Alliance called Oz, and so Oz wants to try to declare itself as a superior force to take over the Earth Sphere Alliance, and they do so like by episode 10. But there's still like factions of the Earth Sphere Alliance still happening. They're still combating at the same time or whatever.
So would you say Oz is like the equivalent of Zeon in this show?
Yeah, in a way. But so it's kind of like Zeon rises out of like, you know, behind the scenes. And, so when it comes to all these factions happening, they're actually all really controlled and funded by a really rich, aristocratic European, union called the, Rockefeller Foundation. So really, Rockefeller Foundations is like you take the top 1% of the richest people in the world and you get them together in Europe, and they're the ones that fund Oz because they have their own goals. And I'm pretty sure they were the ones that funded the Earth Sphere Alliance until they figured out there's no need for them. So it's the, yeah, so then like Trace, who's like the leader.
Rockefeller is probably a very thinly veiled change from Rockefeller. You know, the famous political family, billionaires that are always instigating conflict around the world and funding various individuals to try to promote their own goals and their own investments.
Exactly, and that's what happens in this, where they basically have this coup uprising happening within the Earth Sphere Alliance or the military or whatever. And, you know, through all this that's happening, you know, basically there's a way where, in the early episodes, like episode 6 or 7 or whatever, that, you know, the Earth Sphere Alliance is trying to make peace so they can, cause they're basically, like, they control everything was like as a militarized, you know, force or whatever. It's very, very fascist. And Hiro Yui on a mission, cause Oz tricks the Gundam pilots somehow into thinking that they're attacking Oz leaders, thinking they're going to wipe out Oz this way when they're actually attacking the Earth Sphere Alliance members. Which, because of those leaders out of the way, now Oz has, like, way more control now. So then it's a matter of knowing how evil Oz is, which Oz is eviler than what the Earth Sphere Alliance was. And so now these Gundam pilots are getting their missions, you know, still from these scientists. And then it gets to a point where they kind of have to kind of be on their own, like, once they get to space, because then Oz controls, it started to control space, and so then, like, they start to basically manipulate the leaders of space into these, like, bullshit idealism of, like, peace. And when you hear the dub of this, and I'm sure that the Ocean Group was trying to, like, translate the best they can, it doesn't make any sense, but that's part of the show's logic. And it's a matter of there's a woman in the organization that's basically the second to Trace, who her name is Lady Un. And so Lady Un is the peace ambassador, like Nikki Haley is for the UN. And, she's going out to space. So anime Nikki Haley is, basically like the space colonists are like, it's a lot of like, we know what you guys are doing. And then Lady Un is like, no, whatever do you mean? Here's this bullshit explanation as to why we're not as bad as the Earth Sphere Alliance. And within no kind of like, discussion there, all these like meetings are like, oh, we totally get your point now within 30 seconds. And you're like, what the fuck? But that's the beauty of this show's logic and how like each episode they can convert 5 colonies to their own cause when that would take a matter of like years. If that, and like any other regular, normal political system. I mean, dead gum. I mean, the American political system, we can't even get the Democrats to agree with the Republican ideas. And hopefully doesn't, like, filibuster our country again by, what, the next 7 days or whatever. We'll see how that goes. But,
yeah. They have a week until the next shutdown, and it'll probably happen.
Yeah. So, the policies, and, like, either the people are really manipulative and have so much charisma to convince these colonists to join Oz's side for peace, or the people that run colonies are the dumbest motherfuckers out there. I really think it's the latter.
Yeah. I guess they need to keep it interesting by having people like switching sides and taking people seriously when you might not think they could be taken seriously. But,
yeah,
you know, in the real world, there are people that you think like, how could so-and-so ever support such-and-such? You know, people often wonder that. And,
well, they made like, a pretty good pitch.
How could you vote for so-and-so or how could you side with this country or that country? But, you know, I guess there's probably things going on behind the scenes, like maybe Lady Yun is paying these people off to side with her or something, who knows. But
they probably might have brought that up as a, actually, I don't even think paying people off was, I'm just checking the recording and it is going. Yeah, like, I don't even think paying people off was, like, even, like, within the plot lines of what I heard on the dub of this show. It was just more like they show up to a meeting and they kind of like BS their way into like convincing these people and then they go for it. So anyways,
I guess the thing is that the Earth is so corrupt that they're willing to throw in with Oz just out of a desire for something different and hoping that it'll be something better.
Yeah, but the thing is that they talk by the both sides of their mouth, Oz does. They say the colonists are well aware that they're bringing these military factions, like their own armies and mobile suits, and now they have these units called mobile dolls that are going to space, and they're doing the exact same bullcrap as the Earth Sphere Alliance was, but no, they're not as bad as the Earth Sphere Alliance because they want peace. And that's basically it. Like, the colonists see what Oz is doing right before them, and then they get Lady Un that's just kind of like seduces everyone to their like rhetoric, and then they fall for it. And then later in the series they're like, oh man, why did we join? Like, why do we fall for Oz's tricks? Like, you know, they're so deceptive. Like, no, you guys are just a bunch of idiots.
Well, the thing is, in the real world, they actually do have these ridiculous international relations theories that they teach in political science classes, where they'll say things like, the way to have a world peace is to declare war on all countries that are not democratic and force them to become democratic, and then everybody will be at peace with one another because no democracy has ever gone to war with another democracy. And so you'll hear this kind of stuff and you'll think, well, this is kind of ridiculous because we went into Iraq and we tried to make them into a democracy, and then we have been at war with them ever since for 15 years. And it hasn't caused peace to come out, you know. It caused a war because that's what we did on purpose, was to start a war with that country.
Yeah.
And so you look at what Woodrow Wilson did in World War One. He went over there, he tried to make them into a democracy in Germany. And yeah, they were a democracy for about 10 years, and then Hitler took over.
Well, they were a democracy because they were poor as hell, because they had a gigantic recession, I think even worse than America did. So as when America was going through their recession, they were rising to power because of Hitler.
Yeah, and so they just define these terms in a way that makes it seem like their theory is infallible. But if anyone actually looks at the real-world history of what goes on, democracies are not infallible. You know, you can have a democracy that leads to a failed state, and then it becomes something worse than a democracy and worse than what it was before the war. And so the same thing is true with, like, Oz. You know, people, I guess they just buy into it, like, oh, it's going to be peace in the long term. But what it causes is just, you know, a big war between the Earth and the Oz and all these different factions going to fight each other.
That's just part of the show's logic, because, like, I'll tell you, those early episodes, like, I laughed at quite a few of the lines and, like, how people did things. And I laughed because of just how, not only how stupid it was, but, I mean, basically just how stupid it was, but like, to me at the same time, it just got me to love the show more, because that's just its charm. So,
right.
My best example of this is when Trace is walking along, like, his, like, mansion or whatever, and he's near a lake, and he's having this inner monologue about how Zex will never betray him or whatever, and then he sees a woman with a baby on the dock, and he goes over to it, and the woman turns her back around and the baby starts going off the dock like it's going to fall over. And then as soon as the woman sees her baby and is about to go after him, Trace gets in front of her, basically arm blocks her. He's like, no, don't go after that baby. You have to trust me on this. And then instead of the woman, you know, cold cocking the son of a bitch and, like, you know, wanting to get her baby back, she just sits in it and, like, cowers, like, oh no, my baby, I'm so helpless. And I'm like, oh my God, no parent would do that. Here's the thing, John. The baby sees the goes to the water. He's about to fall in. Sees a butterfly and turns around and comes back to his mom. And at the same time this is happening, Trace is still having his inner monologue about how Zex will never betray him. And I was like, oh, Gundam Wing.
I'm sure that's some sort of
heavy-handed
symbolism where it's like the baby is Zex and he has to trust in the baby to trust in Zex.
Or the baby will not understand freedom until he sees a butterfly fly by his face. And freedom will protect him from jumping off the dock into the water called reality. So I don't know what this show's trying to do.
Yeah.
But there was a lot, I think that's just like one of the scenes. I mean, there's so much in there, and that was the one that just stood out to me about Wing. Geez, even several months later. And I mean, the thing is, like, when you watch this show, like, it's a matter of how they do things. It's just so stupidly illogical, but then you have to realize this is within the universe of the show and it makes perfect sense to everyone else, which is why I bring up those BS policies by Oz in space and how they did the exact same freaking crap as the Earth Sphere Alliance and taking over everything, but they were just more peaceful about it, quote unquote. There's no way And so, all right, so the show goes on. And they convince that, you know, the colonists, that the Gundam pilots are, like, terrorists now at this point. Instead of them fighting for the colonies, because the colonies all sided with Oz, and that's what Oz said. And so then, the Gundam pilots are kind of on their own. Some of them joined Oz, like, Hero and Troa, where they pilot these two prototype mobile suits called Mercurius and V8. Which, I think those are, like, really cool designs, in this show. And which actually, they were kind of the prototypes to these later mobile doll units called, Virgos, I don't even remember. But anyways, like, it's just things kind of come together where, you know, they all, and then eventually the pilots, like, join together as a team. And then for a few episodes, Hero comes back to Earth because at this point, Relina's kind of being reared up as, like, the leader of the Saint Kingdom because she's trying to bring it back after Zex liberated it early in the series. And so she's trying to make it a total pacifist nation. We're not going to fight anyone. We hope that everyone respects our pacifist needs and don't invade us at the same time. So she's trying to play politics, but at the same time getting raped by the Romafeller Foundation, which they wind up invading the place anyways. So then it's the plot point where we get new mobile suits like the Epion and the Wing Zero. And so then at that point, like, Zex, like, loses his mind because of the Zero system and some reality where, like, you know, the colonists, like, we're the people that are, you know, the true human beings of this Earth, and we need to destroy Earth. And then, you know, Hero's like, no, we actually, you can't do that. So that's the side I'm on. So then they take over, like, so Zex, Epion, and this guy named, like, Kurtz, recruit Zex to join this group called the White Fang as they're, like, resistance fighters against Oz or whatever, or the Earth. But then by doing so, they take over this giant space station that can shoot a big-ass laser beam, and their goal is to basically destroy the Earth and all the Oz units on it. And I don't know, man. It's such a, and that's not even the other part of this too, in terms of factions, because, like, apparently.
So could you explain why Zex switches sides? Because when I watched it, it was a while ago, but I remember finding that confusing that he suddenly switched sides and started to destroy the Earth for some reason and betray his.
So here's the factions that Zex is part of. He's part of the Earth Sphere Alliance. Then he's part of Oz. Then he's part of the Saint Kingdom, or as a representative of the Saint Kingdom, flying around in his Talkies mobile suit. And then he joins the White Fang. And so within the series, he's part of four factions.
Okay. Yeah, that rings a bell, because I remember him switching sides a lot. And I was always like, wait, why is he doing this now?
He basically, like, what is this deal? Most of these, like, half of them, they're self-appointed roles. Where, well, actually, no, one, because him being the ambassador of the Saint Kingdom didn't last long anyways. And so then, like, and then the White Fang recruit him, and he winds up being the leader in charge of the thing, because Kantz can't make a freaking decision. He's just a recruiter, not a leader, but, yeah, it's, oh, man. No, because then there's another faction. There's a faction called the Trace faction. So Trace leaves.
Trace Kushinada.
Yeah, Trace Kushinada leaves Oz because he realizes that Rumafeller is paying for these like automized mobile suits. That he's like, there's no pilot in it. That means battles are meaningless if people aren't in it. The beauty of battle is disgraced if you do this. I'm not part of this or whatever. Because he's such a romanticist over like people dying in war instead of having robots do it. So it's kind of this honorable lifestyle or idealism that he has. So because of that, he has soldiers from Oz join him. So then it's Oz fighting the Trace faction because they can't get along. And then the Trace faction just kind of disappears. And then Trace comes back to Oz after the main head of the Rumafeller Foundation dies and takes over for Oz and then winds up leading Oz to fight White Fang at the end of the series. You keep it up, kids? It's so simple. Gosh. Oh, man. I mean, really the big thing of the show was the factions. And in the beginning, I was like, oh, so this is why everything happens, because it's really this, like, the rich people control everything. And then it kind of just gets stupider from there in terms of, you know, Trace faction and White Fang or whatever. But other than that, like, watching this show...
It sometimes makes me wonder how it became so popular with kids at the time, because when you compare it to the other programming that was on Toonami,
yeah,
in that era, it was so much more complex. Because it's not like the other shows didn't have continuing storylines. Like Dragon Ball Z had stories that last for dozens of episodes, but they were not political. They were not complicated. You know, you could basically watch any episode and just enjoy the people beating each other up. And I guess that this is the same way, right? Like, you don't have to know all the background. You just have to see, like, the robots fighting, and that was cool.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, I remember having this conversation with someone in high school, because we brought up Gundam Wing, and I was like, yeah, you know, I'll watch Gundam Wing. And he's like, he's like, yeah, that show was awesome, but all the politics stuff, like, I didn't understand any of it. And I was like, you know, 13 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah. And then at that point, I didn't rewatch Gundam Wing, but, like, the last time I saw it was, like, I think like 2 years ago or something at that point. And this is me now, 18 years later, revisiting this series. And so like a lot of the scenes that I saw that I still remember. And there's a lot of stuff I like totally forgot too. And like the last episode is the one I remember, like I can still remember all these years later. In terms of like animation and how like, you know, Hero and Zex were fighting and the big falling part of the Libra space station because that was happening. They're going to basically take a piece or a chunk of Libra and crash it into the Earth because the laser beam got exploded by another big ship that crashed into it. The other faction. There's another faction to this. So when the Gundam pilots came together towards the end and they got on this engineer's like big-ass spaceship called the Peace Million, and then everyone started categorizing them as the Peace Million group or the faction when it's just the Gundam pilots. So, I don't know why, but so then, like, the big Peace Million ship crashes into the big beam gun of the Libra, so then they can't fire on Earth or whatever. Or they did anyways, but I don't know. But, guys.
At the very end, they put the Gundams in the sun, and then they have to get them back out.
You're talking Endless Waltz, which I haven't gone back and rewatched that yet.
Yeah, and Endless Waltz, they have to get new ones or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember how it works exactly.
They got, like, redesigns for the mobile suits, and then there's another, like, group that I think it's, like, another Trace faction. See, I gotta rewatch that one, too, because it's been...
So there's, like, this evil little girl or something that's in there.
I believe she's Trace's daughter.
Okay, yeah.
And then there's an old man that's controlling her somehow. I don't even know. I remember bits and pieces of this, because it's just... It's taking that same formula and all these factions and condensing it down to an hour and a half long movie. Well, actually, it was three OVAs, and then they made a movie version of that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm inclined to watch both the OVAs and the movies, because I know there's stuff that's edited out. So, and I think there's more in the OVAs than the movie, if I recall correctly.
The version that is on the Blu-ray, is it considered the movie or the OVA?
No, they have both the OVA and the movie. And then they have those Operation Meteor. They made an OVA called Operation Meteor, which is, I think it's just a compilation OVAs or like hour-long movies condensing the Gundam Wing series into 3 episodes.
Oh, okay.
I believe that's what it is. I'm pretty sure. I haven't gotten to that yet. Oh, man.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Even after all the griping of Gundam Wing, and I think about it all these years later, and I gotta say, Gundam Wing, I think, was probably the best show to introduce people to Gundam, that when it's something that's never been on TV before. Because they tried original Mobile Suit Gundam, and nobody liked that. Look how the ratings bombed, because it wasn't Gundam Wing. And even if I think Mobile Suit Gundam aired before Gundam Wing, it still wouldn't do as well.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder about exactly how bad they were, because
yeah.
I know it's kind of taken as like an article of faith that the ratings for Mobile Suit Gundam were really bad, and the ratings for Gundam Wing were really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that they actually publicized ratings back then the way that they do now.
No one thought, I didn't think of ratings at the time. I was like, this show is awesome, I'm going to watch it, and if no one else likes it, we'll screw off. I mean, that was my mentality, still is.
Right.
But
and so maybe it is even true that they took it off primarily because of 9/11 rather than because of the ratings. I think they would have at the very least aired it to the final episode. I don't know whether they would have rerun it. It may have only affected 1 week of airings, but it is worth noting that they did bring it back and air it on Adult Swim for a few months.
Yeah, they brought it back about a year. They brought it back a year later and ran it. And I don't know. I'm not sure if it went further or went about the same length as it did on Toonami. Because I know it wasn't on there very. Because I taped the first 5 episodes. And, I mean, I included the first episode recording on that 0083 torrent for MySpleen. Because in the other 3 or 4 episodes, I gave it to a friend, and he recorded 2004 election coverage off the news, and I was really pissed about him on that.
Well, I think that it was in 2002 or 2003 that it was airing. I think probably 2002, because it was on the original Adult Swim Action block on Saturday nights.
Yeah, it was in 2002 because I remember, like, before I started 10th grade at my new school.
Yeah,
and I know I had it taped.
I don't think they even had it on the original lineup, and that block did not even last a year before they replaced it with SVES, and Mobile Suit Gundam was not carried over to SVES.
Yeah,
I think they aired 0080 on there. But they aired G Gundam on there.
Yeah, G Gundam and 0080 they did, and then they had the Friday night block in 2004 when they aired Seed.
Yeah, yeah. Seed was on Friday nights and Saturday nights in 2004 and 2005. But Mobile Suit Gundam, it's interesting they brought that back for Adult Swim rather than bringing back Gundam Wing, because Gundam Wing probably would have fit better and probably gotten better ratings on Adult Swim. After all, they had previously aired it on Toonami The Midnight Run in uncut format,
yeah,
which was more or less the predecessor to Adult Swim Action. First thing where they really aired something uncut late at night.
Well, here's the thing with uncut, like, because the Blu-rays were uncut, is the fact that there's blood shown and there's some swearing. And that's
swearing,
it.
Like,
oh, very mild swearing. Hell damn. And those are the two that I know of.
But you have to keep in mind that the Dragon Ball Z uncut VHS tapes didn't even go that far. It would be like, they would have like darn and stuff like still in, or curses and drat and stuff like
yeah,
that.
I remember. I know drat's a good one.
Ones. Yeah. So it was kind of uncommon even to have that much on there. And certainly, like, for Cartoon Network at that time, I don't think they had ever aired anything that actually had swearing on there before, other than maybe some episodes of Space Ghost Coast to Coast might have had some.
Yeah, I know Space Ghost had, they started to add more swearing, like, early 2000s or late 90s.
Yeah, because that was on at, like, midnight on Fridays. So that was sort of, like, the corollary to, you know, that was the predecessor to Adult Swim comedy in the,
yeah.
And then Gundam Wing was really the predecessor to Adult Swim Action. And without it, you wouldn't have had Cowboy Bebop airing on Adult Swim on the premiere lineup in 2001. Because they wouldn't have known whether they could get away with airing uncut anime late at night.
I don't even... Oh, yeah, I remember talking about Gundam Wing as the right Gundam for Toonami. Thinking back on it now, like, I mean, despite what hardcore Universal Century fans are, and they're thinking, oh, you know, they should have went with, you know, 8th MS team first. And I'm like, Wing was like, to something that nobody ever knew or saw. Because Wing was everyone's first Gundam in America. I mean, essentially, like, I mean, unless you knew Gundam as an anime fan, but, like, you knew that because you got either the VHS tapes that were coming out from Bandai a couple years prior, or a year prior or so, or, you know, you just happened to know about it through fan subs or whatever. And a lot of people on TV that became anime fans through Toonami did not know what a Gundam was, and including me. And, because I remember looking online, and I remember someone posting up, like, yeah, Wing is just, like, part of one of many Gundam series going back to, like, 79 or 1979. And that just blew my mind. I'm like, what are these other series? And that's what I knew for a little bit. And then when they started bringing another more Gundam over to America, and then that's when you're able to see, you know, like, I was able to pick up information, like, what Mobile Suit Gundam was, Zeta Gundam, all that good stuff. And, yeah, I mean, like, in terms of, like, a story that you don't have to keep up with an overarching plot, like, story, like, the alternative century stuff, like, they're all self-contained. And so, really, like, I would, it's hard for me to argue this, but based on Wing, like, you can get someone introduced to Gundam through an alternative, like, through an AC series. I mean, like, Iron-Blooded Orphans is, like, the new the AC series that, I mean, people are checking or getting into Gundam now through that. And, I mean, it works within its own self-contained series. Like, you know, it mentions, like, you know, stuff like mobile armors and stuff like that, because, like, mobile armors is a term for the mobile armors from the original Gundam. But, like, you don't need to know that getting into Iron-Blooded Orphans. It's like, we mentioned mobile armors, here's what they look like, here's their design, and that's the mobile armor for this series. But you can still keep up with the characters or whatever. And
yeah, I really don't recommend people start with the original Mobile Suit Gundam. It's definitely an acquired taste.
Yeah.
It's very dated by modern standards. The characters are, I mean, they're interesting, but they're more interesting if you read the origin rather than if you see the show.
Yeah.
Because there are just limits to what you could do with an action cartoon in the 70s.
Yeah.
They were aimed at very young children. They were made to sell toys. And there are political things in there, but it's not as complicated as Wing. It's not going to hold the attention of an adult as much as Wing.
Yeah.
Or Iron-Blooded Orphans, for that matter. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely recommend people watch UC stuff if they get into Gundam. Go back and see it and see how it all started and see what it was originating as. But, you know, it isn't necessarily something you need to start off with.
Yeah. I mean, I would either say, I mean, either that or Gundam X as, like, for people to start. Because Gundam X, you can, I mean, like, it's not tied to anything. It's a shorter series. And
yeah, Gundam X is good. Yeah. But there's no dub.
I know. Well, there is a dub that exists, but they didn't add it on the DVD set. Probably because they couldn't get the rights to it or whatever, or who knows where that's at.
Yeah. Well, there's no accessible dub.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, like, I mean, even, like, the friends that I had in high school that got me into Gundam, and they were, like, all these, like, diehard Gundam Wing fans, like, oh, you know, Wing sucks, and, you know, like, it's UC Gundam all the way, and, like, yeah, I agree with that to a point, but in terms of, like, if a little kid came up to me, like, oh, like, you know, what's a Gundam, like, what is that, and I'm like, all right, well, I got Gundam Wing on Blu-ray, and, it's got some minor swearing, but I think your mom won't notice. So, but yeah, like Gundam Wing, like that's something like kids can get into. You got like these main characters, and you know, they're not very likable at all. But I mean, like it's an action cartoon basically, even with like with the politics mixed in there. But they have a good blend between mobile suit battles and political talk. I guess that's why like. I guess for me, like, the weakness of this series is the politics side of it, because, like, you know, they have like a grand idea, but they're condensing it into a 25-minute episode. But you still have to add Mobile Suit Battles in it, so they're just like, let's give it like the most bare bones political message in here, and we'll make it make sense, like Saturday morning cartoon logic, and just roll with it. And it for this show, it does work, and I to a point, I will defend that. But but even rewatching it, like, I just remember, like, it is nostalgia for me, but at the same time, I was like, I don't hate this show. It's so stupid. It's logically speaking, like, it makes sense, like, in a very basic level. Well, it does now when you're an adult, but, like, logically with why the characters do what they do, it makes no sense, and they're the dumbest egomaniac, emotionally unstable people. But I can't hate it. Like, I actually, and honestly, like, when I ended the show, I was like, you know, give it a couple years, I probably would watch it again.
Yeah, I think that actually when you have characters that are flawed and that make stupid choices, it's more interesting than a show where everybody's pure good or pure evil and can predict what they're going to do. And but it, also, I do think maybe if Mobile Suit Gundam, just go back to it a little bit, had aired a few years earlier, maybe it could have done okay. If they had aired it on the Moltar block in like 97, because the animation quality, you know, it's not great, but it's also not really worse than Voltron
or Robotech or Thundercats.
Yeah.
Because that animation style would have fit the Moltar block pretty well.
Right, because Moltar, aired 80s cartoons primarily, and he did have Johnny Quest, which was from the 90s.
And
but
they had, like, Super Friends and Gatchaman, I think. But
yeah, but I think Gatchaman was Tom 1, but yeah, but okay. It was that era. And Gatchaman is actually even older than Mobile Suit Gundam. Yeah. From, like, the early 70s.
I mean, the thing was, like Bandai, like, Gundam wasn't even, like, thought of trying to be a marketable concept at that point, because the only really heavy marketing that was going on was in, like, by 1999, when Bandai was putting out the Mobile Suit Gundam movie compilations, and then 0080, and then 0083 on VHS. And then if they picked those movies to air on TV, that could have worked. I mean, you can't turn it into
a series. They did air movies on Moltar. They had the first three Dragon Ball Z movies.
Yeah.
And they had Johnny Quest versus the Cyber Insects. And I think they had some Batman. They might have had, like, Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah,
and
stuff like that. Yeah.
So they definitely had movies on there back then. And that would have been a great way to introduce Gundam in the U.S. Because those movies, I think people generally would tend to recommend the movies over the show. And I know some people have, you know, gripes about the cast of the movies or whatever, and I don't think they've even been released on anything other than VHS.
Yeah, and I have those dubbed VHS tapes. I should probably rip them and put them on my spleen, because, like,
I have them too. Yeah,
yeah. I actually do like that dub of the Gundam movies. I mean, basically solely because Steve Blum is in it, but
isn't there a British Bright also?
Yeah, British Bright is in there. Yeah, I need to go back and watch those movies. Or when I do, I'm just gonna rip them on my computer and upload them that way. But
I
mean, like, if we're just summing up the Mobile Suit Gundam series, but if we're really just talking about the dub quality, I think Steve Blum did a pretty decent job or good job for Char. And that's not his only Gundam role either. Like, he was a character in the Gundam Rise of the Ashes Dreamcast game. So really, like, if I see Steve Blum, and if I had to get three things signed, it'd be like my Cowboy Bebop DVD set, like the one of the Gundam movies, and then that Gundam Rise of the Ashes video game. But then again, he dubbed in Goku Midnight Eye, so then I want that to get signed. I mean, dead gum, Steve Blum, how much more acting have you done?
Yeah.
Dang, I would love him to sign Goku Midnight Eye. Oh, man, that's so hard to pick. Oh...
I guess you have to see it multiple times and get him to sign everything.
Yeah, I'd be like, okay, what's, like, can I at least get four? All right, you're only doing one, I'll just go in the line four times. I mean, just put me in the back of the line and hopefully I'll have my chance, maybe. I mean, I don't know, but Yeah, and like that'd be like my main things to get signed by him. I mean, I think Bebop I can probably live without. But I mean, like Gundam Rise of the Ashes is something I would love, like just something unique that he like probably never hardly ever gets, and he'll probably see that Gundam Mobile Suit Gundam VHS tape and be like, "Oh my god, I wasn't this." Like, you remember Goku Midnight Eye? That's another fine role you were in, and that is, and I do stand by that. So,
he's probably forgotten all about much of the anime that he's done from 20 years ago.
Oh yeah, because he's been in so much.
Yeah.
Oh man. I don't know. I mean, this is kind of sort of an overview of Gundam Wing. I mean, like, we've talked about it already with characters, and that's in our original review of this, so I'll just kind of put these together.
I think we probably had Jeff and Andy on, like, a long time ago to
talk
about it.
Yeah, we probably did. Yeah, I think we had Andy on and, no, Jeff on, and he said something ridiculous, and I was like, boy, what show did you watch?
He always says something ridiculous.
Yeah, usually it's always, like, something ridiculous, that, like, out of, like, liberal left field. And I'm like, the hell you smoking, boy?
I remember one time he randomly went on about, like, this is what true communists believe. You don't know what communism is really about. Just, like, totally randomly.
He's like, yeah, like, I mean, no. Let's go.
Or just some, like, nonsense that makes no sense.
Oh, I don't think it's that bad, but... No, I love those two guys. I think Andy gave up on anime.
Them, but...
No, like,
oh, really?
Jeff had Andy on like his daily anime podcast show like a year ago or so, and they talked about movies. And Andy was like, "Yeah, I'm done with anime," and that sucks because like Andy was the smarter one that can make more logical sense. And I loved having him on because like you can have a pretty good conversation with him, especially for those unicorn episodes. And then Jeff.
I think we had them on every episode of Unicorn, didn't we?
I believe so, just about. And then like Jeff was the comedic one, but at least you can kind of like have like a pretty solid conversation with him. But yeah, I love those guys, but they're doing their own thing.
Daily Anime Podcast.
Yeah, he did a podcast called Daily Anime Podcast, and it's not daily. And Andy, the joke was that Andy was telling him, like, dude, it's not going to work, and that was a way for Jeff to motivate himself to do a daily anime podcast. And not before long, it fell through the cracks, so now it's like a daily, quarterly podcast, if that, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah, there's four episodes from 2017. I just put one on their website.
Oh, man, I thought it was like two. I'll tell you the best one. He even deleted this, but I have it saved as last year when for Christmas when George Michael died, he basically got drunk and went on a 45-minute tirade on how much he loved George Michael while having Last Christmas on repeat in the back, but he was also incredibly high and drunk. And I downloaded it, and like within an hour later, he deleted it.
Oh,
that was the greatest episode he ever put out, and I have that on my phone. I'm like, no way, man, I'm keeping this. Like, that. I have your shame, Jeff. Oh, some good stuff. I gotta probably just re-upload it on our site and be like, the Lost Daily Anime Podcast. You'd be like, no, you can't upload that.
This is like the equivalent of that episode where you got drunk and read off the Right Stuff catalog.
Hey, I wasn't a punk. That's still up on our website. I didn't take that down. Does it deserve to be taken down? Probably, yeah, but I'm not going to do it. It's old news.
That actually got us a sponsor. So
yeah, it's historic that we get these products from Right Stuff, like Gundam Wing, and then talk about it and rant on it, and then thank you, Right Stuff, because alcoholism does pay off in some way.
That however much you pay for that beer has returned in like thousands of dollars of anime Blu-rays and merch.
we have won out big time. And it wasn't beer.
Capitalism.
It wasn't beer, John. It was cheap Kentucky bourbon whiskey that I mixed with Coke. Because cheap, I mean, Kentucky bourbon is essentially drinking like ethanol straight up. It is cheap liquor. The kind that's like, it's not supposed to get you that drunk that quick, but it did. And I think it sat in our freezer for like 3 years and now, or 2 years, and I was like, oh, I should probably finish this. And then
it was fermenting.
Yeah, and then I was waiting on you, and you never showed.
And I didn't show up.
And that, I blame our success on you. That's the way. I'm not saying failure because we didn't fail in the end. So
we'll have to do that more often then.
I've kind of sort of given up like liquor drinking, to be honest. Like back in November, I ate something and it made me sick, but I don't think that's what made me sick. It was the fact that I downed a Jack Daniel's Christmas cider, because it was like 30 proof, and I was like, oh man, this is nothing. And I chugged the whole bottle down when I was watching Platoon on my computer. And then I got into like this brandy that I bought, and then I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna hurl, and it just went projectile vomit all in the toilet. And so then I was drunk and hungover the next day. I had a major headache, and then I was still puking bile when I woke up, and I thought it was out of me. And then I was like, maybe I did get food poisoning. Nah, it was probably the alcohol. And I'm never gonna drink again. And I think the last time I had liquor was when Alabama won the national title. I had like a shot of, or had like a few sips of that brandy that I still have, but I haven't touched that hardly. So it's like one of those, like, yeah, it took me puking my guts out to realize that, like, no, I should stop drinking. I went past my limit. I don't want to do it ever again. I'm good. So, it was a good lesson. It sucked, but it was a good lesson. But
so it seems like the alcohol discussion here would be a good transition to go into talking about the ghost episode from the other day.
Well, do you have anything else you want to say on Gundam Wing? I mean, I think we've been talking like 45 minutes. Yeah, I kind of just aired everything out about Gundam Wing, and it's stuff that we've said before. I guess to sell the product, if you kids remember watching Gundam Wing on Toonami, you definitely owe it to yourself to watch it again. Like, you'll have fun watching it again, and even like laugh and slap yourself in the face because of how stupid the show's logic is. But dead gum, it's so fun to watch. If you look at it in the right mindset, like people that are getting into Gundam now that are watching Wing, they're like, oh, this show's terrible. And I'm like, yeah, but that's what we had when we started out. And I stand by it. So that's my official review on our retake review on Gundam Wing. And I mean, now that I resaw it again and things made a whole lot more sense and I could really rant on it instead of saying, I think I remember this is what happened. Maybe, perhaps. No, this is an actual. So, yeah, there's enough content there. So we've kind of stated everything. And I think people know what Gundam Wing is by now, but we have another episode about it. So you can just listen to that one and then list this one or however you want to do it. I don't know. It's a free country.
Is the old one Anime of Yesteryear episode?
Yeah, the old one's the Anime of Yesteryear. I think that's like our first year when we started because we did a like a Gundam month.
Okay.
And we covered like Wing and G Gundam in that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it was some good stuff. So anyways, closing remarks time, aka our annual State of the Union, not really. The State of the Union closing remarks.
I don't think we usually commented on them under Obama because they were just so boring.
Yeah.
But,
oh man, last night or the other night, that was some good stuff.
It was definitely a State of the Union unlike the previous 8 States of the Union. I mean, they always say the State of the Union is strong. Like that's the I think because Carter had this sort of pessimistic outlook about the country, and he gave the famous malaise speech where he was like saying like how much trouble the country was in and how people needed to stop using energy and how we were about to run out of fuel. And, and apparently Bernie wanted Trump to give some sort of speech like this. He was like, how could you not mention that we're all about to drown because of climate change? How could you not be apocalyptic? How could you be positive about the state of the country? But Trump was very positive, and he was talking about how much we've turned it all around in the last year.
Yeah.
The stock market growing up and up and up, and the massive cuts in taxes and regulation.
Yeah, all the things I've been wanting to happen for 8 years, it's now happening under 1 year. And there's no more dadgum Obamacare mandate, so I don't have to get a stupid letter in the mail to waste paper to tell me to get something that doesn't, that I can't afford anyways. And
the thing that was the most notable probably about it was the fact that there were so many people that were there. Well, the Democrats that were not standing when he would do things that if Obama had done it, they would have stood. You know, if Obama said something like, "We've got the lowest black unemployment ever," they would have stood and they would have been like, "Wow, what a great achievement by the first black president." But because Trump is, in their view, a racist, because he called African countries and Haiti a shithole, they refused to stand for him. And so they all kind of congregated together and wore the same clothes. And I saw people describing it as like African garb. They had like these weird like...
Yeah, for the Black Caucus.
Yeah, they had like these knit things around their neck. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was supposed to be like colorful, like Rastafarian colors or something. I don't know. But they were all sitting together, and like all the women were all together with the black and to summarize Me Too or whatever, and they're doing that at the awards now too, and where all the women have to wear the same color to signify solidarity. And I think it indicates the fact that the left, they can't accept a speech that is pro-American that's supposed to be bringing people together.
Yeah.
What they want is tribal identity politics, and they're like the funhouse mirror version of the alt-right is the Black Lives Matter, you know, that the people that are white supremacists, they have their counterparts in the black supremacists of Black Lives Matter, and that was probably why white supremacy even took off the last few years, was just as a counter-reaction to Black Lives Matter doing all the rioting and how they would denounce anyone who said all lives matter, like that was an offensive statement to say that all lives are equal.
They are.
and Ghost kept saying during the speech, like, this is a moderate speech. He's not all right. He's not just, you know, praising white people here. He was celebrating the fact that black unemployment is low. That's something everybody should be celebrating. But when he said that, the Black Caucus just sat there. They had like their hands in their heads. They look so despondent about this fact.
Yeah.
Because they want people on welfare. They want them to keep voting for the Democrats to get their welfare raised.
In order for them to stay in office and get paid.
They want them to be dependent because they want them on the plantation. They want them to keep giving them campaign contributions and mm-hmm. keep voting for them because they want them to think they can't live without them. They want to be the permanent political class that lords it over America. Mm-hmm. And that time's coming to an end because people were fed up with it. And so that's why they were so depressed there, even though this should have been something they were celebrating, that the unemployment was down. Instead, they looked completely miserable about that fact.
Yeah. It was just disgusting to see. And I was just, I mean, I think they all stood up a couple of times, but that regarded like what everyone could usually agree with or whatever. But like usually something the stuff that he did,
like plotting a veteran or something. But that would be about it, you know?
Yeah, I think it was like, oh, you know, this family, like, you know, like they suffered this terrible loss, which he had a good amount of examples there. And so they had to, you know, stand up for the people that protected the country or whatever. But, like, and then he had, so the people that he had there was, like, the little kid that was putting, like, mark or flowers or whatever on, like, veterans' graves that didn't get any recognition. And then there was the family that, you know, took in a baby from a heroin addict and adopted it that way. Then there's also the...
I think it was really funny to see how excited Ghost got about each one of these stories. He started screaming about, like, that's an American right there. Yeah. That's a real American.
And he claims anybody, like, from, like... He brought up, like, the Pulse shooting and, like, other shootings where they're just character actors pretending to be sad and, like, oh, they're having a happy, fun time on the news. They don't look sad. This is real sadness. And... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like,
he's like doing like an Alex Jones tier, like conspiracy theory during a lot of them, and he would like go on and on about it. Like even after Trump started speaking again, he would be like,
these people are all actors. That's not what you really look like after something happens. This right here is what you really look like after something bad happens. That's why people call him an Alex Jones ripoff all the time, is these crackpot conspiracy theories. But I think overall his analysis was pretty good of it. You know, because he was saying, like, this is a speech that they should be able to get along with, because he was saying stuff like, we need to rebuild our infrastructure, we need to come home from the Middle East and instead focus on fixing our country instead of building up Iraq and Syria and all these countries over there that are never going
to
be.
That tax dollars went to, that went to nothing, and then, yeah.
Yeah, we spent trillions, and then they just blow it up. They just form a new terrorist group the minute we get out of there and start blowing up their own country again. You know, that's just what they're going to do over there, and it's like, enough of that.
Yeah.
Let's rebuild our own country instead of rebuilding all these countries around the world with foreign aid and, you know, enough of that.
I think
this is something that all Americans should be able to agree with after 16 years or whatever since 9/11, where we've spent trillions of dollars over there for nothing.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the best part is when he basically, like, purposely grilled the Democrats for, like, he turned to them and do his arms, like, come on, guys, get up. Like, the rest of the group is clapping. And they just sat there and looked as miserable as possible, and then, you know, goes calling the lady that's in charge of the minority leader, like, plastic
Nancy face, Pelosi.
Nancy plastic face Pelosi or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's she must have had a lot of Botox.
Yeah, just to have the same miserable personality look about her. I don't even think Botox can save that. But
she's been kind of unhinged the whole time that he's been president. Like, she called the tax cuts Armageddon, and she said that. And then when people started getting bonuses, she said these are just crumbs. So Trump, like, mercilessly ridiculed this comment over the course of this week and started pointing out, like, all these thousands of dollars in bonuses that people have been getting all over the country,
mm-hmm.
and how Walmart has voluntarily raised the minimum wage. They've practically doubled it from $7.25 to $15. And he was saying, like, they did this without the government having to require them to do this. This was just a natural result of tax cuts that stimulated the economy.
Yeah.
And so this is something that, you know, as recently as 50 years ago or something, Kennedy, he did tax cuts to stimulate the economy, JFK. Mm-hmm. But then you have this other Kennedy, I don't know, his grandson or his
Robert or
grandson.
Oh, are you talking about the new one that was speaking? He was the
one that did the response. I didn't even watch the TV. Response, but
yeah.
I'm sure it was against the tax cuts because he didn't vote.
I muted it.
But I mean, I heard he did badly, but the point is that, like, JFK acknowledged that tax cuts stimulate the economy, so he did that to try to get us out of a recession, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats would never do that now, because all they ever do is increase spending and increase taxes. That, even though their own economic models should indicate that tax cuts put more money into the economy, they don't ever want to do that, because it would decrease their own ability to spend money and to give welfare benefits to their constituencies. And so that when Trump did these tax cuts, they just couldn't even believe the concept that it could help the economy, but it has. And the only sector of the economy that's hurt is Bitcoin, because it cracked down on people who are money laundering through Bitcoin to avoid paying taxes. And so Bitcoin is collapsing. And, you know, we've been saying how stupid that was, that it was getting so high, and now it's collapsing. We told you that was going to happen. I mean, that was obvious. It was ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
And there are still some that are ridiculously expensive. Like, Ghost's cryptocurrency is worth $100,000 for one coin.
And there's only,
like,
42 of
nuts.
Them. He's got the limited amount, and he's trying to, you know, stake it that's worth that much. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just it's all just stupid. It's not going to last long.
And I mean, how can anyone trust in Ghost when this is a guy who's repeatedly disappeared for months on end, or one time he even disappeared for like 5 years and no one knew what happened to him?
Yeah.
So why would you trust that guy with your money? Especially when he's so emotionally volatile that he's always like smashing stuff on the air and screaming and like he's a lunatic. Why would you give him $100,000 for a useless coin that can't do anything?
Well, I think it's the fact that he's got his inner circle on it. So then they all got it in the start and have been holding on to it and then making the value go up somehow. But there's no telling that one day that's just going to crash and the rug's going to be sweep out before them. And so then all this, like, you know, money that's, you know, like it's, I mean, unless you know, like, to cash out when you can, then that's the only way you can be able to get anything from it. Other than that, like, it's just, it's taking a gamble that, like, I don't see, like, the positive side of, like, even if you did it, like, there won't be no return on that.
I mean, think about what else you could buy with $100,000 instead of
I could pay off most of my student loan debt, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you could buy a house in some parts of that country. Like, you could buy Mason's house for that. You could probably buy Mason's whole neighborhood for that.
Yeah.
Because, like, his house, I think it sold for, like, maybe 5 digits, maybe 4 digits. I don't know, but it's like a shithole house. I mean,
that's why I think that like 42 coin was for just the inner circle, and they've just been sitting on it, and they're going to cash out on it like once they know the Bitcoin economy completely collapses on itself, which is already starting to happen.
It may be that no one has ever actually bought it, and they simply affixed a value to it.
That's what I think too, because it's just a numerical variable number, like online, like that can change. You can't just hand me something physical and, you know, they have nothing there physical to tell me this is how much this is worth. This is the value of this. It's not tangible. It's not physical. It's just a digit on a computer. I mean.
Yeah. And so I've never really understood the whole craze over it, over crypto.
Yeah.
There's so much energy that's being wasted on it that it's unbelievable. They're even bringing it up at Davos, because at Davos they always get angry about like global warming, and all these countries go there and meet and try to do something about it. And so they went up there, and there's all these different guys talking about like, what can we do about this? Because there's as much energy being used, like this whole power plant's dedicated just to generating the electricity to mining Bitcoin, and like as much energy is being used on cryptocurrencies as like the entire energy being used by Nigeria or Argentina, like all these various countries like there's dozens of them. I think Ireland was one. So that's kind of crazy that there's that much energy being used on that and trillions of dollars sunk into this thing and now it's collapsing. But at the same time, I think it doesn't affect the overall market, because the overall market has still been going up. And so this is just a weird fad that's going on, but it's not actually all that important, because the overall stock market, if you look at it, I'll pull up the stocks app on my phone, just look at it from a year ago, how much higher it is now versus when Trump was elected.
I just know like the green arrow is usually on TV when it comes to NASDAQ and the S&P 500. Usually because about every day. I know that's a good sign.
Yeah, I just went to 2 years on there to see what it was like a couple years ago. It was at 15,000. Now it's at 26,000. So it's almost doubled over the course of his presidency. And that's much, much, much bigger growth than you saw under Obama.
Yeah.
Like, he was the first president that didn't even have 2% growth in any of his years as president. And people were mocking Jeb for saying, like, he was going to get 4% growth, and probably he is too much of a loser to do anything and accomplish that. but Trump has gotten really big growth, and he's been bragging about it because he's a very immodest guy, as everyone knows. But I mean, it is something to brag about when you bring unemployment down to the lowest level it's ever been for blacks and Hispanics, and when you get full employment for the first time since the Clinton administration. And, you know, this is a big accomplishment for him. And, you know, I guess the Democrats just couldn't admit it and couldn't stand and clap.
Well, no, of course not. I mean, despite Trump's faults, because he's got a lot of them, I knew the one thing he was going to do well was regarding our economy. And he's proven that. So, like, yeah, and then you got, I mean, there's been people that are like, oh, but these government programs, but like, not everyone uses them. The private sector is better for people that need to use a program or go to a company that helps that instead of relying on my tax dollars to fund something I'm never going to use.
I guarantee that when they pass the tax cuts, that after that, the charitable donations are going to go up because people have more money. Like, Americans are some of the most generous people on the planet in terms of private charitable donations. Mm-hmm. And so now that people have more money, some of it is going to go into the economy. Some of it is going to go into charity, into, you know, missions, into money for the homeless. And so that is just one part of the benefit of it is the economic growth. And another part is that people feel like, okay, well, now maybe I can give more to others. You know, so that's a good thing, you know, when people have more money that they can give to actually probably a more effective way of helping people, mm-hmm. which is private charity versus government welfare benefits, which just make people dependent.
Yeah. Or as I like to call it, slaves. Slaves to the system, which Viku would totally, he's called me out on that already, because anyways, but.
He's become very communistic in recent years.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, if you rely on something where, like, that to the point where, like, you can't do anything else, you are a slave to it. And that's not black slavery or a racist term. That's being a slave to whatever you're getting, you know, you're relying on that's just beating you down and meant to beat you down. So, yeah, I am calling it how I see it. It's people that are slaves to the system, slaves to welfare. And no, that's not a racist thing. Even though, gee, ironically, you know, blacks were always the highest unemployed, but now they're the lowest ever, so maybe that didn't have to apply to that anymore, but that's just my term. But yeah, I mean, as Ghost said on the commentary thing when I was listening to it today, or even the other day when he had his show, it's like, he's like, yeah, don't ever forget the Obama era. Like, I never want to go back to that. And I'm like, yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, you don't hear him playing Junkyard America on the show anymore like he used to every day. He, you know, he was very negative about Obama, of course. And
yeah.
But at the same time, I think he also was not all that excited about Romney. And I think he quit before the 2012 election even happened. And he was all in on Herman Cain. Mm-hmm. And there was like a clip of him saying something like, you know, what's with this Trump guy? He keeps saying he's going to run and he is not, you know, make up your mind. What's with this clown that's always trying to get publicity for himself? You know, just shut up and go away already. And they play that back to him a lot when they're trying to make him seem inconsistent.
Or, I never said you know, that, damn it.
Yeah. He's one of those hosts that tries to pretend that he was always 100% consistent, even though you can listen to something he said a few years ago and he'll be saying the opposite.
I'll say the opposite in a few years from now, but.
I don't know that he's going to turn on Trump.
The term humble does not apply to Ghost. He can't just admit that he's wrong.
No.
Because then you're like, I mean, like, to me, like, if someone called me out on something I said 5 years later, I would have to be like, that is probably something I said. Yeah, I said it. I mean, it probably made sense at the time. I felt that way at the time. And if I'm contradicting myself, I probably am. My bad. So, like, at least I'm humble enough to say that, but not Ghost. And I want to be that humble in 5 years from now, so.
Yeah. I was listening to the one where he did the anti-alt-right episode where he tried to call into Christopher Cantwell's show over and over and over for an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh.
And, like, at first I thought, he thought he was just going to call, like, his private phone number and get him on the show to debate him,
but he wouldn't answer. And then he scrolled through Gab and found out that he was online broadcasting, and he claimed that he was only broadcasting in order to troll Ghost. And then he wouldn't have ever been doing a show otherwise, even though it was just during his standard hours where he always does a show. And so he pulled it up and started playing it, and then he started screaming at him, and even though he couldn't hear Ghost. And then he just kept calling him over and over, even though Cantwell had another guest on. He kept thinking that Cantwell was just going to hang up on the other guest and answer Ghost. Even though he had repeatedly said on Gab, like, I don't want to debate with you. I don't have any interest in you. Ghost is just such an egomaniac that he thinks, like, this guy's life revolves completely around him.
Oh.
And he was trying to get alt-right people to call up to him since he couldn't get Cantwell. And people just tried to call up and troll him with Radio Graffiti calls, and he was getting mad about it. He's like, this is not Radio Graffiti. This is serious business. My show is serious business. I'm trying to spark synapses in the minds of capitalists throughout the world.
Throughout the world!
My show is listened to by tens of thousands of capitalists throughout the world.
I don't, that's one person that, I gotta wonder who's more humble, Trump or Ghost. I think Trump is.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, it would be hard to be more of an egomaniac than Ghost.
Yeah. No, I have to say, like, that was, like, probably, like, to memory of State of the Unions that I've watched. I don't even think I've ever saw a single one with Obama. That was actually a really good one. It was very positive. He had his punches at the Democratic Party, which I appreciate. And but he had some really good people on there, so, like, guests and everything about, like, you know, the guy, the crippled guy from North Korea, and then also like the family of the kid that was taking a poster down from North Korea and died because of a coma, and. Like, there was countless stories of, like, all the, and then he calls out MS-13 because he realizes they're a problem. And, you know, there's a family that died from MS-13 activities, and, like, he's calling out the obvious.
There, that, like, the parents from, the parents of the victim, and people, this is one of the things that's sickening about the Democrats, is that they refuse to even acknowledge that any immigrant has ever committed a crime. So, like, when Trump founded this, or there's some, like, department that he founded, like, dedicated to investigating crimes by immigrants, mm-hmm. so that they can deport the ones who have murdered people. And, like, when he did that, I think he formed it very early in his administration, they were, like, calling him a white supremacist and saying, like, this is targeting out immigrants and blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, they have a separate legal status where they can be deported if they've done something bad, or they can be indefinitely held, or at least they could have before the Supreme Court ruled that they couldn't be. And Trump is saying, like, well, we're going to end this catch and release where if an illegal immigrant murders somebody, they just get released back, which was what Obama was doing, where if he couldn't find somewhere to deport them to, he would just release them back into the general populace. And there are all these cases where Obama would just release, like, an illegal immigrant who had killed a bunch of people, and then they would kill more people. And it's sort of like there was this program in the 80s in Massachusetts where Michael Dukakis would just let the criminals out of the prisons in the weekends so that they could get some time on the outside or something. They called it, like, the furlough program. And this was this Democratic governor that ran against George Bush in 1988. Mm-hmm. And Bush had this infamous ad called the Willie Horton ad, where he had this image of this black guy that had gotten, he had gotten out of prison on this program. And then he went and, like, kidnapped and killed some people. And, like, all the ad did was it just showed this picture of this guy that killed them, and it described what he did, and it said, Michael Dukakis is soft on crime, he'll let the criminals out,
Literally.
We want somebody who's tough on crime. And so many times in my political science classes, this was treated as the most unconscionable, horrible ad ever. They said it was racist, as white supremacist ad. All the ad did was just state the facts of a particular case and a particular policy. The criminal happened to be black. The fact that he's black is not mentioned in the ad. There's no thought about race other than to the left, which always thinks about race.
Yeah, and then they call everyone else a racist. Go figure.
He's right. Yeah, so they always bring up race when it's like you're just addressing the issue of violent crime. And then they cut, and their mind goes to like, oh, then why are you against black people? So that it's like in their mind, all black people are criminals. And if you want to lock up people who've murdered people, then you're a white supremacist. But no, that's not at all. You know, it's just that we want to have people who are murdering people, not out on the streets, continuing to murder people. And it's gotten to the point where if you are just against having murderers out on the streets, if you think it's wrong that that guy that killed Kate Steinle was being protected by ICE in San Francisco, even though he was an illegal immigrant with a warrant out for his arrest for many, many violent crimes in the past, San Francisco refused to do anything about it. They protected him from the feds when they wanted to deport him. And they say, like, oh, we're just protecting the vulnerable minorities from the white supremacists. Well, the people who are really vulnerable are Americans. Americans are never even considered anymore. It's always about, well, what about this group? What about that group? You know, Donald Trump made this great comment during the speech. Americans are dreamers, too. Our lives matter, too. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's just an amazing thing to have said by the president. After so many years of political correctness, so many years of demonizing people who just don't want to be killed, you know, like,
or don't want to admit the fact and what's true and what's right.
Yeah. So to just have somebody who's going to actually be tough on criminals, who's actually going to not allow people to just murder with impunity and then get away with it just because they're an immigrant or just because they're a minority, you know, that's a good thing that the law applies equally to everyone. You know, minorities shouldn't get special treatment better than anyone else. Everybody should be treated equally by the law. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Ghost was saying, like, Trump is a centrist here. He's not saying anything white supremacist in the speech. I mean, the point of the speech was just, you know, look at the problems of MS-13. This is a problem. Did you ever see Obama bring up MS-13? He never talked about it. I never heard about it once from Obama.
Everyone, he wasn't concerned. News reported, there were several reports on MS-13. They've been around for years. People have known about MS-13. And, yeah, like you said, Obama never flat out just said who they were. He just, like, he always said this, like, it was so passive aggressive. And even, the people, like, you know, people that are terrorists or whatever, like, he would never just admit that either, even though we all saw what they're doing. It's on the news every day. Like, yeah, how do you justify that? You're talking out of both sides of your freaking mouth.
Yeah, there would be something like ISIS would like, do a terrorist attack, and then Obama's response would be like, well, everybody will remember that ISIS is not really a state, and they're not really Islamic, and what we should really call them is ISIL. And it's like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, that is not the right response. You know, like, that's just a ridiculous response. And that's just, I mean, it was unbelievable that he was, and he said stuff like, oh, ISIS, they're just a JV team. They're nothing we should be worried about. And then they take over, like, a huge amount of Iraq and Syria under his watch.
Yes.
Yeah, they take over, like, all this territory. And he won't do anything about it because he's obsessed with, like, Russia. And he's like, oh, well, we can't allow them to be taken out because then Assad might take back that territory, and Assad is aligned with Russia, and Russia is our rival. And but Trump has the guts to say, well, look, Russia has not attacked us. Russia is not our enemy. Our enemy here are the Islamic terrorists that are attacking us. They're blowing themselves up all over Europe, all over America. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a real problem. This Russia stuff that the media is obsessed with is just stupid. It's nothing.
What gets me, within a matter of a year, right before ISIS happened, we were all about, like, putting sanctions on Assad. He was our main enemy, whatever. And then all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, we're best friends with him to fight this threat of ISIS. And I'm like, wait a sec. Weren't you just saying 6 months ago or a year ago that we were after Assad because of all his stuff and how he treated his people, and now he's our ally just out of nowhere, and you're just going to just throw it out there and let us accept it? And I was, that got me.
He had no vision. He just would do whatever the media told him to do, like whatever the new trend was, he would just go with it. You know, and that was just the way it was. He never actually led as president, you know. I mean, he changed the country, but it was only in the way that the media was telling him to change the country, in the way that special interest groups were telling him to change the country. Yeah. You know, if gay people said, like, oh, well, we want to get married, okay, he makes gay marriage legal. And, you know, they say, well, now we need, like, these special bathrooms. Okay, we'll do that. We'll put them in all the schools in the country. Or, you know, whatever. But it was never...
Yeah.
It was never, like, actually his idea, anything that he really did, it seemed like.
It was all just like, oh, okay.
I mean, he had this slogan that he thought was actually going to be advantageous to him during the Libya thing. He called it leading from behind. Like, that was his slogan that he thought was really catchy. Like, this is really going to make everybody respect me if I say that I'm leading from behind. Like, no, that's not... What a strong leader does. I mean, there's no such thing as leading from behind. It's a contradiction in terms. Like, if you're leading from behind, you're being led by others. He did that because the French wanted him to do it, because they wanted the oil from Libya. You know, remember when Donald Trump said, like, there used to be a principle, to the victor goes the spoils. When we win the war, we get something out of it. You know, we would get the oil. You know, we should have taken the oil, is what he would say.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that actually... You know, even if it's kind of messed up to take over a country and then steal all their oil, at least then you would get something out of it. You know, we didn't get anything out of Libya. All we did was turn it over to terrorists. And, you know, now there's ISIS.
Oh, I wonder where their funding's coming from. Maybe the oil that we just left behind that we didn't take over.
Yeah. And now ISIS controls all this oil and all these. Well, not anymore, because Trump has pretty much destroyed ISIS, but, you know, under Obama, they control all this territory, all this oil, and Obama wouldn't, I mean, I remember Trump saying this, and this is a case of Obama leading from behind, Trump saying this during the campaign. He said, well, why don't we just bomb these trucks that ISIS is using to ship the oil to the Turks and the Saudis and all these other countries that are doing business with the terrorists, and just, like, not let them transport oil and make millions of dollars off of it to fund terrorism. And eventually Obama started doing it, but only after Trump brought it up over and over on the campaign trail. So it's kind of like he couldn't just avoid doing it anymore. So, you know, even before Trump was president, it was kind of like he was starting to shape policy just by sheer force of the things he was saying resonated with so many people.
Well, he probably knew that Trump was going to get in office.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And like, Obama just didn't bomb Al-Qaeda at all in Syria for pretty much his entire term until, like, a month before he left office after Trump had already been elected.
Yeah.
And then he finally started doing it because Trump was like, you know, we probably shouldn't let Al-Qaeda take over a bunch of territory in Syria. Because Obama was only focused on, like, we got to get rid of Assad and we got to get rid of ISIS and, you know, that kind of stuff. But he just, I mean, he gave weapons to Al-Qaeda throughout most of his term through the CIA with the goal of overthrowing Assad, which was just a terrible idea. And, I mean, to try to give weapons to these people when they blew up the World Trade Center.
Yeah, weren't we just fighting them and still fighting? Yeah, that just...
Anyway, but these are all problems that we had.
And exactly. Think about it. Past tense.
They're practically all gone now.
Yep.
I mean, just think about how much he's been able to change, even though the courts have been completely against him. Have blocked almost. I mean, like when he tried to do the ban on countries where we were literally at war with, like countries were bombing.
Yeah.
He tried to restrict immigration from them, and then some judge in Hawaii tried to block it. Well, he was able to keep putting out more and more, like, slightly reworded executive orders, and he finally got it to stick, I think. Like, that's... He can finally restrict immigration from countries that have major terrorism problems that we're at war with. You know, that seems like that would be something to be concerned about. And then think about how many people
how many Americans were dying in the Middle East under Bush and Obama? It was thousands every year. And under Trump, I think it's single digits. Like, there was, you know, there was some botched raid in Yemen, some botched raid in Niger.
Yeah, that was a couple months ago, yeah.
But it's like, you hear about it and it's like, one American died, or like, two Americans died in this raid. And that's it, you know, like, there's been no major conflicts that we've had that have caused a lot of us to die. He was able to destroy ISIS without really any Americans being killed. You know, he was able to do it all through massive air power, just by, you know, lifting the restrictions that Obama put on, of like, we can't do this, we can't do that. He just did it. You know, he just got rid of them within a year, and Obama let them have control over the Middle East for like 5-6 years or something that they were in control there, and Trump got rid of them in under a year. You know, that was something that wouldn't have happened if Hillary was president. Think about how much different this speech would have been if Hillary was president. It would have been
I don't want to think about it.
I mean, the economy would be, the Dow would be probably 10,000 points lower, maybe even more. Maybe there would have been a recession and it would have been 20,000 points lower. Who knows? But it definitely would not be this high. And there wouldn't have been the attention to these people that were the victims of these policies that we had under Obama, like all these people that were victims of MS-13. And, you know, that was Obama's open border policy. He said, like, if you're a young illegal, you can just stay here, and no matter what you do, we're going to deport you. You know, the whole DACA thing, where all the illegals that came here as children are fine. You know, these MS-13 people, they're like 15-year-old illegals. They're not, you know, they're not perfect human beings, right? I mean, they're people.
Oh, they do no wrong.
All people are sinful, you know, and so the reality is that there's not just the illegals that are dreamers, and then the Americans who have no dreams, have no purpose, shouldn't exist, or should be replaced, or whatever the view is of the Obamas of the world. You know, that the fact that Trump, I mean, I think what he was trying to do there was he was trying to, like, bring back confidence to Americans after being beaten down for so many years.
Yeah.
And we had all these years of Obama going around the world and apologizing for all these things we've done. And, like, he went to Cairo early in his term and started apologizing to the Muslim world and saying, like, we don't hold any of these things you've done against us, against you, and we should just forgive and forget, and everything is fine, and this is a new start, and we need to bring democracy to the Middle East. And but then you look at what happened in Egypt under him after that, and you had Mubarak, who was there for decades, and that was a stable country for like 30 or 40 years under Mubarak, and then Obama had the Muslim Brotherhood take over, and it was a complete disaster, and it lasted only like a year, and then the military had to seize control again because it was getting so bad. And, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood, they're anti-Israel. They were not, you know, they were not doing good things over there. They weren't helping the economy or anything. They were imposing Sharia law. And this was like something Obama was kind of like encouraging it. He was like, okay, we need Mubarak to go. We need him to step down and bring democracy over there. And then it was a disaster. And you look at Libya under Obama, you know, they brought back slavery, and the blacks in Libya, there were practically genocides against them there because of the whole social contract under Gaddafi, which allowed all these people to live in peace. It just fell apart because Obama decided to get rid of them. And so, you know, we're not going to have any more of, like, we're just going to bring democracy to all these countries and just hope it works out. I mean, I think Trump is not going to focus on that. He's going to focus on rebuilding our country, not spending all this money on the Middle East when it all just backfires and all just screws up.
Yeah, the Middle East countries are even more broken than ours, like way more broken. And you're just wasting money. You might as well just, like, drop money out of an airplane at that point. Because then it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, with us, it's like, you know, he's talking about the economy, how, like, jobs are coming, instead of going overseas, they're coming back here. We're now going to get into exporting and make exporting strong, which is how you have a strong economy. Because look at freaking Japan and Korea. And China, and how they're having their main income is through exports.
Yeah, that's what they do. Is they
they make products that the world wants. They sell it around the world. People, you know, they really like their culture. You know, they have all these interesting shows that we talk about all the time.
That's true.
At Korea, they have pop music that people like.
They make cars that are okay, and then cell phones that sort of explode from time to time. But other than that, like my Galaxy S5 is holding well. So they do make a good product. So
yeah, and people were acting like Trump was gonna like immediately get us into a nuclear war because he's so hot headed. But you look at what happened with North Korea.
Yeah, now they're talking peace.
But then after Trump, you know, he basically forced them to negotiate to go to the table, and
which is what's happening
and
now.
Now they're going to be in the Olympics, and they're talking about, you know, maybe they can. I mean, it's like the teams are unified between South and North Korea. I think it's just one Korean team, and like that's the eventual goal, is we want it to become Korea again. We don't want this communist hellhole in North Korea. Like Obama had this concept of, I think he called it strategic patience, where he just decided, I'm just not going to do anything. I'm just going to wait and hope that North Korea just stops being a problem. And instead what happened was they developed a whole bunch of nuclear weapons under him, and he didn't do anything about it. And he didn't do anything to end that situation. Whereas now it's like Trump is... Yeah, you know, he made some threats, and he made some jokes about Rocket Man and whatever. But now it's actually looking like it's a better situation there than it was a couple of years ago. Because at least now we're thinking like maybe something can happen that's actually good over there. Maybe they can come to some peaceful resolution where it becomes one Korea and it's not communist anymore, and they don't have to have the northern part of that country being starving forever. And you know, the people over there have been living in hell for 70 years under communism. That's something that needs to end, and maybe Trump can end it. Maybe this will finally be the end of that horrible regime.
I mean, quite honestly, like, at this point, like, Trump's approval rating, I don't know where they get these statistics from, but if his approval rating is going to be low throughout his presidency, but he does more to accomplish more than the past 20 years of our presidency, then I'm completely content with that.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter the approval rating, because people will...
Yeah, history's going to know what he did instead of an approval rating that only the news only talks about. Yeah.
People should have realized a long time ago, I mean, there was already an election where Trump got elected, despite the fact that all the polls indicated that nobody liked him. And that he was unpopular, and that he was going to lose, and all that.
Yeah,
it's obvious that people just lie to the polls because they know that the pollsters and the media hate Trump, and they're afraid to even admit to liking Trump because it's just such a program among the media. Like they don't even allow pro-Trump columnists in any of the newspapers. It's just 100% biased and negative against him. Everything they report is just the most trivial, stupid crap. Like criticizing him for saying like "call Fifi" in a tweet or something, like that's a national crisis, you know, that kind of stuff.
And they try passing that into some bill to like monitor Trump's tweets. That's the kicker. Like, oh my, like
that's what the Democrats have to offer, is bills like that where they
so
are like
petty.
Trying to like petty. Yeah, it's very petty. Like trying to micromanage his Twitter account to make sure he can't do typos and stuff. Like that's. That you think that's going to win you in 2020 the election? Like, you think that the president making a typo, you can use that against the massive economic growth and the low unemployment and the resolution of all these international crises and all these things that he's accomplished? You know, you think you can leverage that against, oh, he made some mean tweets, he made some typos, he criticized Mika for getting a facelift, you know, like that kind of stuff that they are always like wailing about. It's stupid. Like that's not stuff that people actually care about outside of DC. I mean, they have this ability to believe anything negative about him, where there was this meme going around the Guerrilla Channel. It was a fake excerpt from this Fire and Fury book. It's like some Hollywood gossip tabloid columnist that wrote a book about Trump. Mm-hmm. Somebody put a fake paragraph from that where it was talking about the Trump insisted that his people create a guerrilla channel, which was just gorillas fighting, and he watches it 17 hours a day and talks to the gorillas
and
thinks that they can hear him. And this is not something that actually happened, but there were all these like people with millions of followers that consider themselves the leaders of the resistance, where their every tweet gets tens of thousands of retweets, were just passing it around like, oh my god, this man is so unstable. He shouldn't be president.
Well, maybe you should read the book to see if it's real.
Yeah, and they didn't think to check, like, the source at all.
Yeah.
They just make stuff up, and then they all pass it around. And then, you know, that's how this whole Russia thing got started. It was just this made-up dossier. And there were these rumors that were given to Rick Wilson, this idiot strategist, and he's the guy who famously went on MSNBC and said Trump supporters are all just losers who masturbate to anime, and he actually took all these 4chan rumors seriously, and then there was a new one that they fed him right before the State of the Union, and he believed it, and it said that Trump was going to call for the end to the Russia Gate investigation during the inauguration, and it was just a slightly modified quote from Nixon in like 73 or 74 where he was saying like the Watergate investigation needs to come to an end. They just replaced water with Russia, and he didn't think to like search this quote and see like, did Trump actually say this? Is this actually in the transcript?
What is he going to say? Tonight? Yeah.
He just said, oh, this is going to happen tonight, and it didn't. He didn't say anything about Russia.
Yeah, and that's what I said. I was like, Trump's not going to say this, and he's just going to look like the biggest idiot, and he's going to keep his job. And I'm completely right on all that. Trump did not say
and
it.
And I guarantee he didn't.
Wilson
apologize.
Looks like an idiot, and
he didn't
Wilson
say
still
like
keeps
I was
his
wrong.
Job. No, he won't.
He keeps his job. He's yep. keeps yep. saying stuff that's fake.
Yeah, and then so if anybody's just like, remember all this stuff that like Trump said, and I was like, all the stuff that never happened that you all thought was going to happen. Oh, you got this from Rick Wilson, that effing retard. That's a consultant for MSNBC? No, you're stupider than him.
Yeah, I mean, if this guy still has, like, a job at a national audience.
No wonder Donald's on fake news. I mean, you got idiots like Rick Wilson that's, like, correspondent of some crime.
Yeah, and like, the stuff like that is why they do the fake news award. Like, people couldn't believe he actually did this, that he actually put up a list of fake news stories and gave them awards. But they were all like whoppers. Like the number one was Paul Krugman saying the economy will never improve under Trump. It's going to hit a catastrophic low and it'll never recover. It's the end of capitalism forever. And this guy is like the number one New York Times op-ed writer. He's treated as an expert in the financial markets. He's had that job for 20 years or more at the New York Times, 30 years probably. But everything he says is just fake. And nobody cares at the New York Times to fact check him or to like tell him, like, no, don't just say something like that. It's just like the complete opposite of reality. And there were so many cases on there where it was just the media getting basic things wrong, like dates and fake made up, like they would say, like, today Trump passed an executive order bringing back torture, and it didn't actually happen. Like, he didn't actually pass this executive order, and there's all these different executive orders that they came up with that they said Trump was going to sign that day, and then it didn't happen. Like, there was one where it's like, today Trump's going to sign an executive order to officially make it so that you can't be gay anymore and stuff like that. And it's like, no, he's not going to do that. Like, that's stupid.
You have to look back. You have to, like, take a step back and think about it. Like, okay, like, is he really going to do that? Or am I just going to, like, before I freak out and get all hysterical and rant about it on social media, let me just take a step back, think about it, and realize, this is too fishy. It's too good to be true for it to be right. Therefore, it can't be right. And therefore, that is the correct answer.
Yeah. And CNN, they have the gall to advertise themselves as the real news organization. And they have, like, this ad that they run. It's just ridiculous. Where it's just, like, a picture of an apple. And it's 30 seconds of some narrator, some self-important CNN employee saying, "This apple is an apple. And people might tell you that it's a banana, but it's really an apple." And they think that this is like a really profound like dig at Donald Trump. And it's like, no, you're just being childish and stupid. Nobody cares about your stupid apple metaphor.
Yeah.
Like, that's just dumb. That's not going to work.
I'm not even, in terms of me looking for work since I'm out of college, like, and I applied to a lot of places for Turner. I'll tell you right now, I will not put anything in for CNN. Like, I mean, I'd have to have a position if I was there to, like, I just do something and I won't say a single word. And that's be like a videographer or whatever. Like, I'm just there to shoot footage. You don't need to know my opinion, but I'm just there. I'm like, I could probably go as low as that, but everything else in Turner, I'm like, let me just find the Cartoon Network and Adult Swim jobs and stick to those. Hopefully I'll get something. But,
well, even there, like, I remember there was someone, like, exposed them, like, trying to stoke up some Islamic protest against Trump. Like, they were, like, somebody else was standing there, like, behind CNN, like, filming them as they, like, directed these Muslims, like, okay, here's where you want you to stand. Here's what we want you to say.
This is the protest that were in, like, London or something, or, like, the anti-Muslim anti-Muslim, whatever. It was the protest against, like, the anti-protest on Muslims.
I think the Muslims were, like, protesting to stop Trump from coming in, or they're protesting against Brexit or something.
Yeah, I remember that, and it's only, like,
CNN
a handful
was, like,
of those.
Them.
Yeah, and it's they shoot it in a certain way to make it look like there's a huge crowd of people. Like,
that's
you
what
can't.
They do.
There's no ethics in news broadcasting or media or, you know, journalism anymore if this is the case where you have to stage stuff like that. I mean, that's just ridiculous. There's a Key and Peele skit which is based off of a thing that happened where, like, it's called, like, the Pegasus or whatever, where they're like, it's a news van that comes out of their neighborhood and, like, oh man, we gotta get a story by 5, what do we come up with? And the newscaster is like, every neighborhood's got a story. So then they start saying, like, they go up to this random guy in the hood, like, hey, you heard about the Pegasus report? And then, you know, the guy on the street is just like, yeah, I know the Pegasus. And then this whole thing spreads out from there. I'm just like, you can make up something and then get, like, 50 people involved and then, like, make it into a true story. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. They did the same thing with Trump's crowds. Like, there was some case where Trump said, like, oh, I'm going to give a speech tonight, and so the media, they got there before Trump was there, like, hours before the speech started, and there were only a few people there.
Mm-hmm.
And they did this with the inauguration, and then they did this with another speech more recently.
I remember the inauguration of how empty the seats were or whatever.
Yeah, they took pictures at, like, 6 a.m. or something, and then they used that to say, like, look, nobody supports him, there's nobody here. And then they did this again recently, and that was in the fake news. They were like, look, the Washington Post just took these pictures before the speech even started, and then they used it as proof that nobody went to the speech. Like, this is just fake news. And stuff like that happens all the time. The subtle ways that they can distort things.
Yeah.
It's really devious what they do, and they know they're doing it, but they still act like they're, oh, we're just saying what's happening impartially.
We're trustworthy. We're not manipulating the truth in any way. It's like, come on.
Nobody actually believes that. You know, it's ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, they treat the American people as the biggest idiots and that they're sheep. And not every person, not everyone falls for it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do.
That's true. I guess I shouldn't
Maybe
say no one 50... believes it. Like, half the country probably believes it.
Yeah, fully believes it, and the other half are very skeptical of it. So I think you've got, like, a small amount that are, like, everything that's on these main news stations is all a bunch of bull crap. I don't ever watch them because it's not real. Then you have the people that are very skeptical about it. Like, really? Is that? And then you got, like, the other part of it that's just like, oh, my gosh, this is the true story. The media would never lie to us. Like, get real.
Yeah. They've got this memo that's supposed to come out tomorrow that Trump's gonna release, which is the congressional Republicans, apparently they wrote it up, about how the this whole surveillance on Trump's campaign thing was abused. Like they didn't really have very good evidence to be wiretapping him. Yeah. And the media has been playing this up like it's a huge threat to the FBI and to our national security workers, and anyone who supports releasing it just wants all of our agents to be killed by Russians. As far as I can tell, I mean, nobody knows what's in the memo for sure, but you know, from the leaks, it sounds like it's something like there were a few of these agents that were colluding to basically to try to prevent Trump from becoming president or to make his presidency short-lived by just creating a scandal out of nothing. Just like the concept that he's a Russian spy. They use this dossier that Rick Wilson was involved with that has all this fake news about him, you know, peeing on the Obama's bed in the Russian hotel.
And who cares?
And it's like all this fake stuff that they use to get this, this surveillance on Trump approved. And then they have all these texts and they like pulled a Hillary and they deleted 50,000 texts after they got subpoenaed. Yeah. And these two agents, they were supposedly they were texting each other every 5 minutes about ways they're brainstorming ways to screw Trump, and like some of them got leaked to the press, and these were agents that were like contributing to Hillary, and they were involved. Like some of them were even on the FBI's Hillary Clinton email investigation,
one
that said that she didn't do anything wrong. So they had all these people on there that were directly tied to the Clintons on this investigation to make sure that they completely exonerated her and did not press any charges against her for running this illegal server where she had no security over all this top secret information that she was passing around. And she had been sending it to like Anthony Weiner, who's this sex criminal, and Huma Abedin, who's involved with the Muslim Brotherhood that's close to Hillary. And so you have all this criminality going on there, and Hillary has like her own personal handpicked people on this FBI investigation, and she's got her husband meeting with Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, to make sure that no charges get filed, and then people caught them meeting at the Phoenix airport.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was completely corrupt. And does the media want to talk about that? No, they want to talk about Trump and the Russian prostitutes, which is not even a real thing that actually happened. It was just made up by 4chan and sent to Rick Wilson. And so they spent like a year on this totally fake Russia crap. And it's insane that there's so much real stuff going on that's actually good news. And all they want to do is smear him with fake news. And I think that what's great about the State of the Union is he can just directly talk to the American people and make his case, and then the media can't do anything about it. I heard something like NPR, they were like doing real live fact checks in real time, and this is something that the media does now, is they call it a fact check, and it's just like a Democratic talking point that they'll run, and they'll say it's like, we're just being factual here. So like he'll be talking about like, you know, the MS-13 thing, and then they'll cut in and they'll say, you know, while applause is going on from the Republicans or something, they'll say, actually, it's unfair to tar all immigrants with this, even though Trump didn't do that or anything. And this is supposed to be like an impartial newscaster. And so it's like they can't help themselves. They, even like NPR, PBS, they're supposed to pretend to be impartial because they get government funding.
Yeah.
But even they can't even pretend that they are just going to let this speech just stand for what it is. You know, they have to try to find some way to undermine it in like in real time, just so it can't sink into anyone or anything. So it's just like the amount of bias in the media it makes his approval rating so low, but I think this could raise his approval rating. And even if it doesn't raise the approval rating in the polls, it raises it in real life, and yeah. It helps him for the. I mean, he's going to get to do this again in 2019 and in 2020, and he does these rallies where he just goes out and speaks to the American people, all around the country. Mm-hmm. I think he calls them the victory rallies or something like that.
Yeah,
where he gloats about how he won, and tells what he's doing and what his side of the story is. So, like, he went to Phoenix shortly after the Charlottesville thing, and he went there and he started talking about how he's he's denounced white supremacy, like, four or five different statements.
Yeah.
And the media kept saying he didn't denounce white supremacy. He won't denounce white supremacy. And he kept doing it over and over, and they kept saying he wouldn't do it and that he didn't do it and that he's standing with the Nazis. And so they just lie, and they just pretend that he doesn't do things that he does, and they pretend he does things he doesn't do. And it's just unbelievable, the dishonesty of the media.
I know, but the only thing that's protecting them to do that is freedom of the press, because, like, it's in the Constitution.
It's up to the people to
decipher intelligently what is real and what isn't, and to pick what it's really picking on what they like to hear instead of what's actually the truth. Because, yeah, I understand the truth is hard to take, but you want the truth because it's the truth. It's honest. It's factual.
Some people in the media, they love to attack Trump because one time he went on Alex Jones' program when he was running for president, presumably because Roger Stone told him to, and he's been friends with him for a long time. And Roger Stone is also friends with Alex Jones. And so he went on there and he said, "Alex, you have an amazing reputation, just the greatest. You're such a great fighter for freedom," and stuff like that. And he probably has never listened to Alex Jones.
Probably not.
But it's also true that his son, Donald Jr., sometimes links to InfoWars on his Twitter account and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that he's like, prints out the articles and gives them to his dad sometimes. But the media thinks that's like a sacrilegious thing. Like, this is like the most offensive thing that he could be giving Alex Jones credibility. And Alex Jones does say stuff that's fake, but you have to keep in mind, some of the alternative media stuff is fake and some of it's not credible. But at the same time, there's so much stuff that's fake from the mainstream media too. You have to just look at all the different sides and decide for yourself what is real and what is not real.
Yeah.
And so you have to look at the mainstream, you have to look at the alternative, and just try to think rationally about it and not just be prejudiced, like, "Oh, Alex Jones is crazy." You know, some of the stuff on InfoWars is actually legit. You know, it's not all like they're turning the frogs gay, that kind of stuff that he says.
The frogs are gay, and I have the evidence to prove it. And 1776 will commence again under the Donald Trump era. And my filters and anime is real. Ah!
Yeah, I love the ghost Alex Jones impression. He's good at it because he just naturally sounds like Alex Jones. But when he like ramps it up to
like, you see, like, he can't do the voice like, you know, I can. I mean.
I did that, my brother and I were driving back from Atlanta a couple weeks ago, and I did the voice, and he was just like, he was laughing so hard that he told me to stop because he was hurting. And I was just making up stuff. And then I told him about ghosts, and then my brother was like, "Wow, this guy sounds like a nut job." I'm like, "Yeah, he is." It was funny, like, speaking of ghosts as ego, like, when I'm hearing the commentary on the, because I wanted something entertaining to listen to really keep me invested in what Trump was saying. And it's the fact that, like, you know, Ghost would say something, and then Trump said it, like, 2 seconds later. It's like, and Ghost is like, I told you, that's what he'd say. I said it already. And I was like, but in my mind, I'm like, he was getting to that point. I'm not that stupid.
Yeah, he did that a lot. He thinks that, like, Trump listens to his show, I think.
I wonder. I'm just tempted to do like an audio recording of me with Alex Jones's voice and come up with something where like I admit my defeat just to try to boost Ghost's ego or something. I don't know if I want to do that or like basically gets announced his show, and then Ghost goes into a rage. I need to get through first, or at least give my message to a troll and be like, can you play this for me? I have some good ideas. I can't get on there. You guys take the realm and the rings for that, just so I can have fun with this guy.
Yeah, you tried to call in after the State of the Union.
I knew I wasn't going to get in because those people, like, you call in the number and you're listening to the live broadcast of it. So I think I was just waiting for my area code to be called, and that's how I figured out it was on the line. I guess that's how it works. But,
there was that, that splice that,
bad man! Amada feels bad, man!
That was great. That got him to quit, like, in the middle of the show during Grab Shout Out Friday, which he almost never does.
Yeah, that was last week.
Yeah, that was a great episode. he was like, he kept yelling during the speech, how can anyone be a Democrat after this speech?
Yeah. This is the most anti-American! If you're a Democrat, you're an anti-American piece of trash! I ain't disagreeing with that all the way. I'm not disagreeing with that, so. Oh. Yeah, it was just hard watching that. And, you know, just like, he's making a lot of good points and he's like trying to call for unity and they just sit there and protest. It's like, good job, guys. But I noticed like the C-SPAN that I was watching, every time I went to like the crowd reaction, it was always the Democratic side. And I didn't know, I don't know how to take that as either like, we support the Democrats' decision for sitting down or we're showing just how bad they really are. And how they're.
I think that was like the more newsworthy thing to show because you can kind of hear that the Republicans are like standing and clapping.
Yeah.
But to see the Democrats look so angry and like sitting there scowling when he says like unemployment is down, like that's more interesting than to see the Republicans just standing and clapping. Like,
yeah, you're getting an equal amount of sides, but it always usually started with the Democratic side, so maybe that's the like. I'm not sure how to take that as either people that were watching it that are Democratic or Republican is either just, I guess if you're Democratic, like, you know, I guess the people that want to claim for unity, like, you know, do you look at that as like, oh, way to go. I'm glad we're uniting together and sitting on our couches and our fat asses and not getting up and applauding our president, or guys, can we, like, this is making us look bad. Like Trump is saying some good stuff. So I don't know how to really take that. That's kind of the way I look at it.
I just searched what the polling looks like after the State of the Union. And it says Trump's State of the Union focused mostly on right things, 60%, wrong things, 38%. And then here, what was your reaction to Trump's State of the Union address? Enthusiastic, 35%. Satisfied but not enthusiastic, 21%. Dissatisfied but not angry, 26%. Angry, 16%. So he's got, this is like the opposite of what it was before. You know, before he had like 40% approval. Now he has like 60% approval based on this speech.
Yeah.
So this just shows how powerful his message is when he can just say it without having the media distorting what he says.
Yeah, because we all saw the same thing at the same time. Like, yeah. You can't mess that up.
And then how much credit does Trump deserve for the economy improving? 39% say a lot, 21% say some, 20% say not much, 19% say none at all. So again, 60% in his favor, 40% on the other side. So you look at all this, and it seems to me like he's gonna be doing very well in 2020 if he runs against somebody like Hillary again. You know, I think he would win if Hillary runs again, and it seems like she wants to because she won't stop talking about how mad she is that she lost.
But I hope she loses, and then there's another book that she writes bitching about how it's all everyone's fault except for hers. And it'll just go in the discount bin in 3 months. So,
I think she'll keep running until she dies because she doesn't have anything else except for her dreams of power.
Yeah. That's... I stand by this statement. I mean, like, I've had friends that, like, when past presidents die, like, I had one that, I was watching, like, Ronald Reagan's funeral, and he was, and I was telling him about it, he's just like, oh, because he's completely more liberal now than he was before, and he just started, like, ranting about, like, all these policies that Reagan had, and he's just like, oh, you can't stand his approval rating, I can't stand him, and whatever, and it's just like, I think that's the same way I'm going to feel if both Bill and Hillary do die. It's going to happen. They're old. But, you know, you figure if it happens within the next 3 years, then there's no way that either one could run. Or both. So, and I'm going to be in the position where, like, no, I'm not watching it. Because I do not approve of what they did while they were when they were in power. And there's so much evidence to back that up. So, that's kind of my feeling on it.
Can you imagine what the resistance response would be? You know, like, if when Hillary dies, like, they'll put her in, like, a see-through coffin in their version of Red Square.
Oh, my god!
They'll all be, like, around her, like, bowed down. You were too good for this world. We failed you, but you never failed
gosh.
Us.
Gosh! Oh. I guess that's the best way to display someone is in a Stalinistic, communist, socialist way, where people can gather around a person that has done more wrong than good.
So that was NBC there that I just was telling you the poll numbers from that did the State of the Union, mm-hmm. and NBC is of course the most anti-Trump of all the networks. They have MSNBC and they have all of these very, very left-wing commentators. And the video at the top was NBC commentary right after it was done, and it was said something like, Trump overstates benefits of tax bill or something like that. And so then the next result is CBS, and they've got 75% that said they approved of the speech. Only 25% said they disapproved. And then it says 65% said they felt proud watching the address. 35% said it made them feel safer. Mm-hmm. And then CNN, it says 70% said positive response to the address. 48% very positive. 60% said it was moving the country in the right direction, 35% saying it was in the wrong direction. So basically, it was a very, very successful speech, and even more successful than that NBC poll indicated at first. And I think that if he can do something this good next year and in 2020, he has a very good chance of winning re-election. And the speech was written by Stephen Miller, who's written many of his other great speeches. And Lindsey Graham is trying to force Miller out of there because Miller is his main negotiator on immigration. And he's the one who's insisting that there has to be changes to the chain migration system where anybody can just come in and bring an unlimited number of their family members with no vetting.
This is a Lindsey Graham policy?
Well, this is what Stephen Miller was saying he wants to end, and Lindsey Graham is saying he supports this and he wants to keep this here because it's pro-family. This is how he frames it.
Screw Lindsey Graham. Why do we keep electing him in this state? Why?
That's how I felt about McCain when I was in Arizona. But anyway, this guy, Miller, he seems like he's probably one of the smartest guys around Trump. This guy's only 32 years old. But he's some sort of policy genius or something. He's able to write all these incredible speeches that whenever Trump goes out there and gives one, he gets a huge boost in his approval rating. And Graham says, we need to get this guy out of there on immigration because he just doesn't agree with me on this stuff. We can't reach a deal as long as he's there. He doesn't want to increase immigration from Haiti and Africa. I had this great compromise where we were going to change the whole system so that we only got immigrants from Haiti and Africa, and that would have been great. and then we could have given amnesty to all the DACA people, and we could have gotten more diversity, and Miller stood in the way. And it's like, oh, thank God Miller is there, and that Lindsey Graham was not elected president in 2016.
God. I got to figure out when we have to... Because I didn't vote last time for our state's people, because I was more interested in going on a date with my ex than I was voting. And, but even if I did vote against Graham, like, he still would have got in. But I hope now, like, when the election thing comes around and I'm still in the state somehow, like, I will. I'll vote for – I'll do a write-in. I don't care. I got – it's one less vote for Graham. I don't care who his opponent is. I mean, it could be the most – I guess maybe the most liberal Democrat. I don't know. But, like, I mean, Graham's going to be in there until he dies, just like the last guy.
Just write in Stephen Miller, and that'll really piss Graham.
I hope more people write in Stephen Miller, I swear. That might be a pretty good idea. Why are you there? Like, because everyone here has that vote Republican mentality, because they're dumb as hell around here, too. And, like...
Yeah, people they think do he's good just because he's a Republican and they're Republicans and they don't actually look at policies and how messed up he is.
Like, come on, we can do the same thing as Roy Moore did and not give that Joker any spotlight in the political realm and give it to a Democrat but I don't think there's anything like dirt wise on there probably is, but it's not going to be as like severe as like Roy Moore was.
Well, so there was some guy from like Playboy or Hustler or one of those dirty magazines that claimed that Lindsey Graham was gay and that they had a bunch of photos of him, but then they never actually released it. But that's always been a rumor because he's like the only senator that's not married. So people think he's like a closeted homosexual, and also based on his effeminate way he talks.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. And it's funny that the position Graham took over, and I forgot his name, like he held that position for like 50, 60 years because people just liked
Strong
it.
Strong
Thurmond is a guy. I looked him up online and basically he was in two marriages. He was having kids until he was like 70. Something ridiculous. And then it was either like before his death that like when he was 22, he banged a 16-year-old black girl and had a kid through that. And then he eventually found out that he had a kid through her.
He was a former white supremacist. And they kept electing him until like 2005 or something.
And he died shortly thereafter, like 6 months later.
Yeah.
That dude was over 100 years old.
Yeah. On Lindsey Graham's Wikipedia page, it says that he voted for Evan McMillan in 2016. He didn't even vote for Donald Trump for president. And it says, yeah, he's been there since 2003, and he succeeded Strom Thurmond, who was there from 1956 to 2003.
Yeah.
1954, actually, to 2003. So he was there for 50 years. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And this was the guy who went up there and he spoke for like a whole day or maybe even 2 days against the Civil Rights Act in 1964.
Sounds about right.
And they like gave him a bucket to piss and shit in like while he was speaking. And he went up there and he just like started yammering about stuff that had nothing to do with the legislation. Like he read off like his granny's cookie recipes and stuff. And he just kept going and going and going. That was back when the filibuster actually meant something, because he would actually have somebody go up there and just talk and talk and talk. And then when he finally was like, I guess he was just like completely drained. He just like eventually he left and stopped, and then they voted, and then it passed. You know, like a filibuster back then, eventually it ended, but now it just goes on even if nobody is speaking. So they can just require 60 votes for stuff, even if it's like nobody actually speaking. So they can just hold up stuff like the budget forever, just through the minority of the Democrats, and they won't let it. Them even fund the government because they're so obsessed with protecting illegals, and they need 60 votes to pass a budget through the Senate.
I think with Strong Thurman, the one, I think this is the same guy that I heard a story on when I, years ago where, like, he'd go to, like, meetings or Senate hearings, fall asleep through them, and then wake up and just start ranting about whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this is a guy that represented South Carolina for 50 freaking years.
Yeah.
This is what the fuck. It's a shithole state that I'm living in. Although I will give it that we have lower gas taxes here and things are cheaper, but that's because everyone here is mostly poor. But maybe the economy will fix that. I don't know.
Okay, here's the quote from Wikipedia on the Civil Rights Act. In an unsuccessful attempt to derail passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1957, Strom Thurmond gave the longest filibuster ever conducted by a single senator, speaking for a total of 24 hours and 18 minutes. Cots were brought in from a nearby hotel for the senator... for the legislators to sleep on, while Thurmond discussed increasingly irrelevant and obscure topics, including his grandmother's biscuit recipe. Other Southern senators were upset with Thurmond because they thought his defiance made them look incompetent to their constituents. So he's like an embarrassment even to the other Southern states.
They and this
like,
is going so back Carolina, 60 years ago, and it was good job.
God. Even for 1957, he was so
yeah. 57 standards. He's a nut job.
Embarrassment to like his, Alabama.
And he kept his job. Like that's what it gets me.
Yeah, for another 50 years.
Gosh.
And he ran for president several times, and yeah. A bunch of people actually voted for him.
You imagine the State of the Union address? It'd probably still be going on by now if he was.
He'd be like, still doing it as a ghost or something.
Oh my gosh.
He would have like a silence to like tell what he was saying or something. Yeah, he got over 1 million votes in the 1948 election as when he ran for president.
Yeah.
That's nationwide, but it's kind of crazy that he even... was able to get nominated by a like by some third party, the Dixiecrats, in the 48. He won 39 electoral votes in 4 states in that election. These have to be the most redneck of all the states. It's Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, of course.
Of course.
Those aren't the most redneck of all the states.
Florida isn't tied to that?
No, Florida voted for Truman, apparently.
Oh.
But they are kind of like a redneck white trash state, too. You always see these Florida man state stories.
Yeah. Well,
like,
I mean...
some, like, retarded, like, redneck with his shirt off, like accidentally lights himself on fire or some shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's the, like, the Florida Everglades that, like, half the state is covered in, and there's always these sinkholes. I know Orlando smells like something bad. Like, it's always, like, an open gas leak all the time. At least when I was there last time. Probably still smells just as bad.
Atlanta? Yeah. Well, Georgia is pretty bad, too.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about just Orlando, Florida. I mean, I don't...
Oh, Orlando. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I even hear Miami's worse. Oh, jeez.
Maybe. And JT would have to be here to tell us the story of Florida, but he's rage quit the chat over things we know we'll never figure out.
At least give us his grandmother's biscuit recipe. At least that would be something to start with. He's the Strong Thurmond. He was the former Strong Thurmond of our chat.
Do you remember when Donald Trump said Lindsey Graham's phone number live on television?
Yes.
Just to call him out? That was hilarious.
Oh, that was great.
He had to, like, cancel his phone and, like, get a new one with it.
I'm like when I saw that I was just like, oh, thank you so much. I think you are the guy I want to vote for. I like John Kasich. I still do, but I gotta say, like, you know, Trump's making a pretty good argument for himself. So I think with Kasich, yeah. It'd be boring. Let's be real.
Yeah.
I still. I mean, like, if I had my way, I'd still vote for John Kasich, but.
I think in 2020, maybe there will be some primary challenger against him, like Jeff Flake was talking about it with the mayor of Mesa in Arizona. Yeah. Like, maybe I'm going to run and save the party from Trump, because he keeps comparing him to Stalin and Hitler and stuff. And then, but then he always ends up like caving and voting for the tax cut bill anyway and stuff like that. So I think in the end he's going to cave, and he's not going to run against Trump. And like, his approval ratings are going to go up, you know, once this Russia crap finally comes to an end. Like, maybe this memo will finally expose it for the joke that it is, and they'll have to move on to discussing the real issues. Which,
you're talking about
McCain? Well, I was thinking that, Flake was gonna run, because McCain is too old and he has brain damage and he's gonna die soon.
Yeah.
But Flake is much younger and he could run, but I mean, we already had like a never Trump Mormon candidate in 2016, which was Evan McMullen, and he couldn't even carry Utah. You know, somebody like Romney or Flake, you know, people act like they're going to run against Trump, but there aren't enough Mormons in the country to elect them, you know? And so yeah. I think that Trump is going to get the nomination again. He's going to get elected again. And, you know, if Trump has his way, don't you think that he's going to, like, his second term is coming to an end, he's going to want to, like, pressure his people in the Senate. Like, you gotta get rid of this amendment that it has only two terms. I gotta run again. I gotta be president for life.
And I know, like, that's what Obama was gonna do. And I was like, oh God, no. But, like, there's no way. And then it didn't happen. And I mean, yeah. I mean, Donald Trump Jr. could run.
That's true. But he has that. Well, there was that scandal where he met with the Russian woman, but that'll probably blow over by the time 2024 comes around.
Yeah.
Eric Trump, there's Ivanka, they could have the first female president.
First hot female president?
First Jewish president, too.
Hey, there you go.
She's converted to Judaism because of her husband.
I think Ivanka is a very beautiful woman. So,
well, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, in terms of, like, who I would get excited more as a female president to see on TV, I'm going to have to go with Ivanka. So,
more than Chelsea Clinton?
I don't know.
Maybe we'll have the rematch of daughters.
I don't think Chelsea Clinton's, like, groomed to be a politician, or I don't know how corrupt she is, like, her parents. Hopefully she isn't. I mean, like, my thing is, like, with her parents, like, if her parents go, like, I'd feel bad for her. It's like, you know, I'm sorry you've, you know, because I saw her, you know, grow up when I was a kid when she was in the White House. And, like, she's been out of the spotlight for so long, and that's a good thing. I mean, I don't know what Chelsea Clinton looks like now. I mean, she's probably doing all right. I don't know. But.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether she would even want to run after having her mother live.
Yeah. Wait, I know I mean, like, you have to be, like, over 35 to run for president, I believe. That's one of the preconceptions.
That's true.
So I don't know if Ivanka is going to be old. I think she'd be old enough by then, because she's like, is she in her late 20s? I don't even know. Early 30s, maybe?
I'm not sure. I just Googled Chelsea Clinton, though. Apparently there's some issue where an SNL writer said that Barron Trump is going to be recast as Preston Sharp, who was Melania's State of the Union guest. I don't get it. But then Chelsea Clinton came to the defense of Barron, saying, whatever our politics, I hope we can both leave 11-year-old private citizen Barron Trump alone and celebrate 12-year-old Preston Sharp for his work to honor the graves of every military veteran. Oh, this is the flag kid.
Yeah.
Donald Jr. replied, on this we agree, thank you. It is interesting how the media will just attack Barron all the time, even though he's just a little kid, like, just because his dad
is the president. Yeah. Like, you know, poor Barron. I mean,
back in the Clinton years, there was that one time when Rush Limbaugh made this joke about, why did they get a dog when they already have Chelsea?
the Clintons. And like the left never forgave him for that, and they always bring it up like whenever they want to attack Rush. But now they do the same stuff about Barron. They always attacking him. Like they did some thing where they found like some artwork that he drew of
big breasted women.
Yes,
I remember that. I was like, I hear. Well, they're gonna like, oh, he's growing up sexist or whatever. Like, you know what? Okay, first of all, it's probably normal for him to see that because his mom's a former supermodel. You know, and it's like, and I'm sure like maybe his dad had like, his dad ran the American pageant, so like to him it was normal to see women in bikinis all the time. And I'm like thinking, man. Hey, that ain't a bad way to grow up.
these are great images.
Yeah, but for me, it's just like
a meme that Barron watched anime because of just like look at that girl with that. Blue hair, I mean, green hair, and the way her eyes are.
What kid doesn't watch anime? Oh my gosh. It's on, like, if you grew up watching cartoons on TV or streaming, chances are it's going to be something from Japan.
Oh, this one's good.
Oh boy.
There's a snake that's about to go for this one. This
I think that might have been the one I saw. I remember people pulling it, remember, these are archived these quick before Trump gets elected because they may be taken down or something. And I think they're probably still up there. I don't even know where the images came from. I don't know how people found them, or unless he has like his own like WordPress website as a kid. I don't know.
The Barron Trump DeviantArt, I think. I'm just joking. I have no idea how they found it.
I don't know either. Like, I don't know. I mean, at least like people dedicated like to Chris Chan levels of infiltrating the Trump Tower, going into his bedroom and raiding his like drawer of like all these pictures and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it is interesting. It looks like they found some web archive of a page called Barron's Art Gallery.
And he probably drew those at like 6 or something, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. This is on his Encyclopedia Dramatica page. He has a whole page dedicated to himself.
Oh my gosh, he's on Encyclopedia. Oh god, poor kid. Oh, you poor kid.
According to the expert opinions of Paul and Robot 9000, Barron is a fan of Spyro the Dragon. Okay.
How is that bad? I mean, a lot of people like that game. Your argument is, I feel bad for these presidential kids. I mean,
it seems like Rosie O'Donnell attacked him, it says. And PewDiePie. Oh my god. PewDiePie did some image of Barron failing at a high five and like made a whole video ridiculing him.
Screw that Norwegian prick.
I bet Barron has like security around him at all times.
I'm sure he's got internet security so he can't Google his name. I would, as a responsible parent and a Secret Service agent. I don't want to mess up this kid's life. He doesn't need to know. Like, there's no way a kid his age could just handle that amount of like abuse. I mean,
oh, here's a different Saturday Night Live writer. Like, they have multiple Saturday Night Live writers who have attacked Barron. This one says, Barron will be the country's first homeschooled shooter. What?
What?
Like, they just randomly accuse him of being a mass shooter. Why? Because he likes anime? Or because he's the president's son? Or, you know, there's no reason for anyone to hate him. Like, he's never actually said anything on camera.
No.
Or done anything. But they constantly attack him and bully him.
Gosh. Like I said, poor kid.
Rosie O'Donnell sent out a tweet claiming that she had proof from Reddit that Barron was autistic. And then after she got attacked for it, she later claimed that she was just raising awareness about autism.
That fucking fat sow. That's someone else that could pass away that I would couldn't care less about. I'm sorry, but, well, I'm not.
I mean, there's a reason why when Megyn Kelly went after Trump and she was like, you said that women are fat slobs, and then Donna was like, only Rosie O'Donnell. And everyone, like, laughed and clapped. And, like, it was generally regarded that Trump had won that exchange.
Yeah.
You know, that woman is so impulsive that, like, even Trump comes across as, like, a classy guy compared to her.
He's like, my reputation isn't as ruined as hers.
I guess we talked about the State of the Union like twice as long as we talked about Gundam Wing.
Yeah, I think we probably talked about the State of the Union just as long as the State of the Union. Do you think we should do our own podcast, State of the Union, to keep this upbeat? Like, what are our goals this year?
State of the podcast.
State of the podcast. I cannot Let me try my best. I, Dustin, cannot promise that we'll do another Takahashi versus Tamino review by the end of the year. Although I would love for it to happen. You can't expect at most maybe 2 convention reviews from me, yours truly. I would love to get Gerald Rathkolb on so we can talk about Gale Force, because I've been hinting at that for 2 years.
That's like I've still never seen Gale Force.
I'll have to stream it so we can all, like, if we concentrate on the first 3 DVDs and get him on, because he's like, he'll stream on Twitch and he's just like, man, like, I've been thinking about Gale Force a lot and I just need to watch it. And I'm like, dude, I need to get you on our show so we can talk about Gale Force. So, and out of the respect,
so
for,
is there a dub?
Yes, it's an old CPM dub. Okay. It's pretty cheesy, and I like it.
Well, there's a bunch of them. I've went on the Wikipedia page. And
oh,
it's like a bunch
I don't. I mean, if we focus on the first 3 and get through those, then like, and then probably paraphrase the other ones that I kind of remember what might have happened if we try to cover like as a general spectrum of them. But
the
at least
first
it's Gale Force.
85 minutes.
Yeah, that's the movie, internal story. And then there's Destruction and then Stardust War, which were just kind of like direct-to-video stuff. And then it was Earth Chapter, then it's Rhea Gale Force, then it's New Era, then it's Revolution. And I have not seen Revolution, even though I have the fan sub tapes that I got in the mail from Gerald Rathkolb.
That one is not even licensed?
No, it's never got put out.
Hmm.
So that would have to be something we could probably cover. I think we can probably do like a Gale Force month, maybe. That would be interesting.
Yeah, we could do like one a week or for a month or something.
Yeah, a couple months maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's that chibi thing. Didn't you say there's some chibi thing with Gale Force in it? It's like the Gona Gai world.
Oh, a 10 little Gale, super deformed double feature. Which is 10 little Gale Force and Scramble Wars. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's 2 shorts. These were put up by Anime Ego on VHS. I've only been on a VHS. And I do have a VHS for that.
Right?
It is sub only, yes. So that's actually like, it's actually pretty fun. I like it. It's kind of made for the diehard
like
fans of those 2
easy
series.
Easy one that we could do, you know, just to.
Yeah. The same we covered Gale Force.
It takes not very long.
We could probably finish everything up with that. Man, we need to cover Bubblegum Crash, because we talked about Bubblegum Crisis years ago. And Bubblegum Crash is always, it's something on the back of my mind. Same with 80 Police Files, but I just find ways to keep putting those off. Or I do.
Uh-huh. I did eventually watch them, but
yeah.
It's been, a couple of years now since I saw them.
Yeah, I mean, last time I talked about Bubblegum Crash was on the old One Pixel Jump podcast with Joe and his brother, and they don't exist anymore. I don't know where they're at. I love those guys, but they're off doing bigger and better things in life, I'm sure. But yeah, and I'll definitely, I can, the links for those still exist, so I can definitely put them up for like old episodes that I was on to talk about, Bubblegum Crash.
Is it still on archive.org or something?
Yeah, it's on archive.org. I will say that, like, I think the biggest thing is getting through another Takahashi versus Tomino, because it's been almost 2 years. And I think we owe it to ourselves. That, like, if, to me, if, like, covering that and Galforce are, like, my two main projects. And I know Devilman Crybaby is a really big thing to talk about, but it's just kind of like, oh, we'll get to it when we get to it. That's more of a Halloween episode. I like to save it for Halloween.
I guess we could just have, like, Daft and Josh come on and talk about it, since they seem to want to do an episode on it.
Yeah.
And then we could do, like, our own one later or something, but I don't know.
Well, that'd be kind of stupid, because then we're talking about it again in the same year twice.
That's true.
I'm sure our listeners have so much confidence in us, and like, wow, these guys are really organized. Like, no, we're not.
We could like have them record something and then just like sit on it for 9 months, and then eventually when we watch it, just like merge it with ours.
Now, if we did that, yeah, we sit on it for 9 months, but then they're going to go off topic on irrelevant information 9 months later, because that's what Daft does best.
That's right. Daft wouldn't even talk about the anime.
He'd go on and be like, oh yeah, I like this other title. Josh, did you know, like, this mall con I went to? Like, let me tell you the story about that in Ruins the Onyx podcast. Jackass. But
we haven't had him on in a while, have we?
Well, we had him on, shoot, I know we had him on back in the summer, I thought. And that was something. Oh, that was the Batman Harley Quinn movie that was garbage.
Yeah, I think he talks about like the Power Rangers at one point.
Yeah, we had him on for Power Rangers, because that was a that was separate recording, but we combined that with the Ghost in the Shell review we did.
Yeah, but he's on the recent ones. We kind of contained him by like he was only on half the episode, and then he disappeared or something.
So fine by me.
Which is better than the ones where he's on for like 3 hours and he just insists on going on about like which chat member is the most pathetic. We got to talk about that, or which fandom is the worst. Or,
yeah, he wants. Kind of oh, he's going to try to promote that stupid NCAA bracket thing about worst fandoms, because he wanted to do that like 2 years ago. Unless he forgot.
Yeah, I hope he forgot.
I hope so too. For my sake,
he kept insisting that we like do that as a podcast, that where we discuss like
we did a whole episode fandoms. On we did a one on Timbox. Like, you can't get any more autistic than that.
he wanted to like compare like which fandom is worse, the Goof Troop fandom or the Power Rangers fandom.
Wait, there's a Goof Troop fandom?
That was my reaction too. It's like, how are we even going to judge this when we don't even know what the Goof Troop?
I didn't even know like people like were, there was huge fans of Goof Troop all these years later. It's like, I love you Goof Troop as a kid, but I haven't been able to go back and watch that show in almost 30 years. But I remember as a kid liking it and watching it, but I could not tell you anything about it other than like it had young Sam and Max in it, and then Pete, and then. Well, Goofy, of course, and then, I mean, I love that the Goofy movie, and then that sequel is another piece of trash. But and that direct to movie sequel where it's like X Games are popular, just make a Disney movie about where Sam goes to college and tries to be in the X Games, and Goofy gets a girlfriend, and everything's all wacky crazy from there. That movie sucked, but you can watch the original Goofy movie. And still just love that. It's a great father-son movie. Because I saw that like a few years ago, and I was like, wow, this is a good movie. I'm glad it holds up 20 years later.
Well, I guess maybe we would have a lot to say about it then. But yeah, I haven't seen that in a long time, and I don't know much about it.
I remember I had the Goofy movie book, or the novel, like the kids' version, like in elementary school. I have no idea what happened to that. Or, no, I think I did have it, and then I sped right through it in like 4 hours. And I can't remember anything about it, because when you speed read, you don't retain information on something I already knew what happened. But I don't know. I just, like, I remember picking the book up, and I just kept flipping through the pages like crazy. And before I knew it, like, by the end of the day, I was done with that book. And it was, like, one of those bullcrap days where you had nothing to do in third grade. Mm-hmm. I just remember I did read that book. but I can't say anything about it because I don't remember anything from it other than picking it up and then I knew I finished
it's
probably
it. Probably the same stuff as the other versions, you know?
Yeah, maybe I just got bored and skimmed through half the pages and didn't even realize it. I have no idea, but...
Apparently there's a Goof Troop video game.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I ever played it.
It says it's the father of survival horror games on Wikipedia.
What?
Yeah, I'm not even joking. I've been
like this. That cannot be right. No way. The only thing I know interesting of Goof Troop is that Phil Perry sung the song to Goof Troop, and he's also the singer for the Rhyming Bean anime for the song.
It says it was designed by Shinji Mikami, and the survival elements that would appear in his later games first appeared in Goof Troop.
I want to challenge that statement. I need to play a Rama Goof Troop. Maybe I might do it after this podcast. I don't know. Is that for the Super Nintendo?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. Brother Goof Troop. Doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop. I know the song. I remember that.
It sounds like it's just a standard platformer puzzle kind of game. I don't know that it's the father of survival horror games. Like that's weird.
I don't buy that fake news or fake info on Wikipedia.
Oh, this guy that did the game, he went on to do the Resident Evil.
Yeah, I know. I know the name, but that's probably like one of his earlier like works. I don't know.
It says he also did Who Framed Roger Rabbit and all that games. I bet that those articles also have similarly ridiculous claims.
Yeah.
That people do this kind of stuff where they try to claim like everything that came before that somebody was involved in was like the prototype of a more famous work.
Oh, it's like, so deep, man.
The same.
Yeah. I don't even know what time it is. How long have we been going on this recording? It's almost midnight my time. Holy crap.
It's been a while. You have to get up at like 4 in the morning to talk to the Chinese students?
Oh, no, so. Not yet. I'm still doing my application process on that.
Oh. When do you think that's going to start? Like, you haven't fully gotten approved for it yet or anything?
I'm still filling out stuff and studying it. We've been going for 2 hours and 45 minutes. I did not expect this to go on this long.
Yeah, I guess we went on like 2 hours about the speech.
Yeah.
And other stuff. Mainly how much we hate the media.
Yeah, there was a lot to say there. And then also Strong Thurmond's legacy as a South Carolina senator.
Just trashing your horrible senators.
Trashing my horrible state. Well, we might as well go ahead and close this out, so... God, I can't believe we've been talking.
Daft is talking in the Slack chat about how he's about to buy a Johnny Test poster.
Why?
Because he's very autistic.
I know. He's got no room to talk about other people with autism. To get a poster for like one of the worst shows on Cartoon Network.
Yeah. Watch, he's going to like buy this and then he's going to start buying like Teen Titans Go posters. And putting them all over his apartment.
As a way, and he'll claim that as some way to troll us or whatever. And he thinks, like, yeah, it's totally working. Like, only an effing autistic would think that way.
Yeah, like, I'm totally trolling and being, like, anti-establishment here by buying merchandise for the most popular TV show on television.
Jeez. All right, I think
you go to the Cartoon Network store in Atlanta. Was it totally filled with Teen Titans Go crap?
Mostly, yes.
That figures.
Yeah. I'm ready to shut this down, man.
All right, later. All
right, have a good night. Thank you for listening, whoever made this long through State of the Union podcast talk.
So, yeah.
Even if you agree or totally disagree with the policies, thanks for listening. I gotta go. Yeah. Later. Bye. Like father, like son, you're always
Yeah. You are wasting